Hi, I'm Nick.
And I'm Nestmaster.
We're the hosts of Planet X Control Room.
We have a lot of fun on this podcast, including voicing our own opinions.
Remember, we're big fans of Daikaiju films, and our opinions do not necessarily reflect the fandom.
That's right. Like many of you, our favorite films and our opinions of what's happening in the world of Daikaiju differ from other fans.
You're more than welcome to disagree with us. In fact, if you want to make your thoughts known, you can email us at GodzillaPlanet@gmail.com. Or you can post them on the Godzilla Planet Twitter and or Facebook pages, or you can visit the Godzilla Planet forums at www.godzillaplanet.com/forum.
Please remember, we're entertainers and a lot of what we say and do is for your enjoyment. Thank you for being a fan of Godzilla Planet and listening to Planet X Control Room.
It's December 16th, and you're listening to episode 27 of Planet X Control Room. I am host number one, Nick Gainu, and with me is my partner in crime, Ness.
Yes, indeed, I am your partner in crime. So, hi. Yeah.
It sounds like we're on a telephone conversation now, since, are you done printing?
Well, yeah, because I wouldn't have said that we're pretty much starting.
Yeah, it's interesting, because once you said 3, 2, 1 as we began, it sounds like, at least on my end, when I hear you, it sounds like we're talking over a phone.
Good! Well, I do have a fan going on. I don't know if that's kind of somewhat...
That might be it, because I do hear a...
Oh, let's see here. Let me turn it off.
Yeah, you might want to do that, because I'm having a hard time hearing you as it is, because like that one episode, a couple episodes back, you were going in and out with volume, and I think we might be having that same problem.
But, yeah, so we're actually seeing ourselves through video Skype, so we're, yeah.
Oh, you're done talking. It's a good thing we have cameras, because once again, you just faded out on my end there, and it's like I had to look at your picture just to make sure you weren't talking again, so I wasn't interrupting you or anything.
So, yeah. So, this is pretty much the last show of 2012 for PXCR until 2013, and by that time when we have the next episode, we should have the website up and running.
Yeah.
Hey,
so
no typing.
Special episode for you guys. It is going to be the last episode of 2012 here. And so if any of you who have been paying attention, especially to our Facebook page, know that we have been mentioning that we are going to have a special long episode. We're going to have several discussions here this evening. And news, we don't have a whole lot of news, although there's one, I would say, decent news with the G2014. And then there's going to be another bit of news that we have posted on GP. And also, let's see. Well, let me just give you a quick rundown of the show. Basically, what we're going to do after the introductions, oh, and before I continue that, on my personal blog, Godzilla's Kingdom, as some of you know, as I posted that one time here, oh, maybe about a week ago, on the GP Facebook page, that I was trying to get a new post up. This would be my first official review since late August, so it's been a long time. I was having problems again with WordPress, and I found out that WordPress updated their whole layout again, so that caused problems. So everything now should be working, so I should be able to get everything up. Oh, and by the way, now I've graduated.
Hooray!
Now I've got more time to work on stuff like that. Maybe. I'm hoping. It's like I said, it's been a long time. And then... okay.
Speaking of WordPress, have you actually gone through our admin area just to kind of take a look and what?
I haven't yet. No,
you need to do this.
I know, I do, but see, we're not officially launched yet, and finding a job right now is higher up on the list than going through the admin page.
Still, this is important.
Don't worry, I'll take care of it in due time. But anyway, a quick rundown.
In due time, that's like in a couple of weeks.
Boy, I'm going to have trouble hearing you. We're having that same problem as we did a few episodes ago. I don't know why, but we are. But a quick rundown of the episode here. We're going to ask each other what's on our Christmas list, what have we purchased lately, quick bit of news. Then we're going into our news segment, the control room, where both Ness and I have what I would consider decent segments here. Then we may or may not take a break after that point, but then we are reviewing... the third to last, believe it or not, Godzilla movie of the Millennium Era, Godzilla X Mechagodzilla. So we're going to do that. And then after that, what we are going to do, I'm scrolling. We got a request on Facebook for a dream match, and that dream match is Titanosaurus versus King Kong by William Brehm, who left that on our Facebook page. Then we're going to have a particular discussion that has been kind of brewing through my mind, and I find to be an interesting topic, and that is worst Godzilla movie. Even though none of us dislikes any Godzilla movie, we like them all the same, even though we do have our favorites. We were kind of looking at the fandom as a whole and kind of why certain people are at odds with some of the films and trying to, and even obsessed to a certain degree as far as what they think is the quote-unquote worst Godzilla film. Like the big two that come up are Godzilla versus Megalon, Godzilla's Revenge, and then I would even say to a certain degree, at least in recent years, just because this is the most recent Godzilla movie, Godzilla Final Wars. And then we're going to continue our discussion of the era of Godzilla films. Last time we had the discussion of the Showa era. This time we're going to have Heisei era discussion. And then we're going to have actually Tune It Up. And then we are going to conclude with our new game, Name That Movie. So that's a quick rundown of this episode. So so let me go ahead and start off. Ness, what is on your Christmas list?
Well, I do know that since we were kind of talking about last night on the what to do before the episode and all that, kind of doing some of the finalization, I was talking to you about the Ultraman Tiga DVDs, like the first two or the middle two. And will you stop typing?
I'm sorry, I'm...
that's part of our rules and stuff, so... Stop typing!
I'm not typing!
Yeah, you were.
I was situating myself in my seat.
Oh, sure you were. I can see through that video. Back to what I was saying. I know I was talking about Volume 2 and Volume 3 of the Ultraman Tiga DVDs that were released in the early 2000s by Funimation. And... I know I was really wanting to get those, but recently on Amazon, some of the people have been selling that for around $150 to $180, which is ridiculously, you know, unrealistic and ridiculously high priced, because I'm not even sure how much of those there are left of that DVD, but I do know that volumes 1 and 4 of Ultraman Tiga are around like $7 to $10. So pretty much on my priority list, or Christmas list as you will, is the Ultraman Tiga volumes 2 and 3 for the DVD, which I'm hoping that someone in G-Fest 20, when we get there, when we get to the dealer's room, that's my top priority, is to find those two DVDs of Ultraman Tiga.
Well, I'm sure they'll have. I'm sure someone will have them.
The people that I was talking to you about that had a bunch of Ultraman DVDs, but they had them on like as a bootleg and all that. But I was wanting to at least find something that's like the official Ultraman Tiga DVDs. So, but anyways, I'm kind of rambling on. So that's kind of what I have on my priority / Xmas list, and I don't think I have anything else up to this point in time. So, what are your things you want on your Xmas list?
I'm glad you asked.
Sure!
I put on my Christmas list the Dark Knight Rises DVD. Money. An e-reader.
Oh, I didn't think we had this Kindle. Kind of Xmas list. I thought we had like a kaiju related.
No, I just said what's on your Christmas list. And
who
then,
told me that?
And then I think, oh, and Chicago Bears clothing.
I'm sure.
That's what I asked.
I'm sure.
But yeah, if I were to make a kaiju list, it would be everything that I don't own. That would be
pretty much what you sold off.
I regret that. I really do. But
see, I told you that you were going to regret it when you were selling those off, and it's like, you shouldn't do that, man.
Yeah,
sure enough.
Yeah, different time. Different time. Different time. But anyway, we're going to move in now to what have you purchased lately? Oh, I'm glad you asked me that, Ness.
You asked that yourself.
What I have purchased lately, I've been purchasing these Super Deform Gamera figures. I've been getting them off of Clawmark Toys and even eBay for a very, very, very good price. So I probably have purchased what, maybe close to between 10 and 15 of those, I would say. So, namely, Gamera Super Deforms right now. And also, I just recently got the Yongari Konga double feature DVD. And of course, all of you know my big fascination with Yongari these last couple weeks. In fact, I will be talking about that in the control room segment, where I will be discussing whether or not either the 67 or the 99/2001 film is superior, at least in terms of what I think. But I will discuss that a little bit more here in a bit. But so I finally got that movie on DVD. But yeah, so that's what I purchased.
So what I have purchased, and I know I showed Nick a picture of these last night, and I know I'll post up a picture of these two little figurines on Facebook, so by the time this episode is released, you probably would have already seen what I'm talking about, and it's kind of somewhat hard to describe these things. They were made by Bandai about a year or so ago, and they're kind of somewhat of a super deformed version, but they're more kind of like about 4 to 5 inches tall, and they're pretty much kind of a figurine deformed versions of Godzilla and the 1974 version of Mechagodzilla. And I really don't know how to describe these. I'm not even sure what these are actually called. I'm going to say kind of like a big, super deformed version of these figures, but I know they're not super deformed. That's not their title and all. I actually got these $15 each from a comic book store that I went to up in Roseville yesterday called Source Comics and Games. And if you live up around here in the Twin Cities area and have heard of that place, then you kind of know what I'm talking about. But I digress. These two figures are pretty unique in a way. I know I've looked at these online for quite some time, and I thought it would be kind of, you know, cool to own these little figures. And yeah, I mean, kind of gives them a nice little take, you know, a different take on what they look like and all. And when I'm looking at Godzilla here, he kind of reminds me, with his face expression here and all that, it reminds me of a pig for some strange reason.
He reminds me of what's Lizzie off of the Rampage.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, that's it. So yeah, you can probably kind of tell from what we're describing a little bit, but the pictures I'm going to post up soon on the Facebook, which you'll already have seen before this episode's launched, then you kind of pretty much know what I'm talking about. So yeah, that's kind of pretty much the only thing that I purchased lately is these two little Bandai big, super deformed little figurines of both Godzilla and Mechagodzilla.
Yeah, the Monster Arts figures, I think they started those, earlier in the year? Monster Arts? Those are pretty cool. They're like the Bandai vinyls, except they're a little bit more articulated and maybe to a certain degree a little bit more detailed. But the problem with those is that they're expensive. Like, the cheapest you're looking to spend on those figures per figure is if you go onto eBay and maybe catch them for like $40 a piece.
So, yeah. Like,
I'm going to steal that.
Sure you will. But anyways, yeah, that's kind of my little deal. So why don't we head on to the next segment here, which is the news. And the first part of the news that we're going to be talking about is the latest official trailer that was just released the other day of Pacific Rim. And as we have seen in the trailers and stuff, we see a lot of, at least maybe two or three monsters shown in this trailer. And from what it looks like, the movie is taking place in San Francisco, because we see at least a couple monsters destroying the Golden Gate Bridge. And we also see the robots, which are called the Jaegers, which is J-A-E-G-E-R. That's how Jaegers is spelled for these robots, and they are operated by two pilots within kind of what I think the chest of the robots. And then we get to see at least a few scenes where the Jaegers battle the some of the kaiju in the film, and so far it looks very promising. I've been looking forward to this film for quite some time, and I know the film actually releases on the day when G-Fest 20 comes out. So, I know there's a theater plaza just about a couple blocks northwest of Crown Center O'Hare. So I'm not even sure if we would have time to see it and maybe discuss a little bit more about the movie, of what we saw, what we liked, didn't liked, and all that. You know, at least have some kind of material. But yeah, the trailer so far looks very promising. You know, just kind of looking forward to seeing the film. And speaking of Pacific Rim, there seems to be a possible sequel in development. Mm-hmm. And the person that wrote the first one is coming back to write the script for the sequel. But from what it sounds like, the status on Guillermo del Toro's status on returning seems to be somewhat uncertain at this point of time. So it seems like that Pacific Rim will still go, even if del Toro decides not to direct the sequel. So that's the only thing that I can that we can bring up for the sequel news for right now. So it's still kind of sparse since the Pacific Rim movie hasn't even come out yet. So with that in mind, we have our next set of piece of news here that is, according to comicbookmovie.com, it seems like that the Legendary Pictures Godzilla has confirmed at least one cast member so far, and with the production date rolling around here closer, which will begin around sometime in March, the person that has been casted is Aaron Shane, which from according to some of the information, he's around age 16 right now, and from what it looks like in his past history of doing some being a actor and all that, it seems like he has been casted as a supporting actor for most of the time, except for having a co-starring role in an award-winning Chinese historical drama show, Three Kingdoms. And probably, if you've heard of the name before, probably the most well-known show that he's been in thus far was that he was in a couple episodes of Entourage, which I haven't even seen, you know, that show yet. And from what I've seen, too, that he's going to be having a voicing casting role in an upcoming Rio 2 animated film, which I haven't even seen the first one yet to that movie, but I digress. So that's kind of what we have so far in the news. But I will definitely know for sure that as soon as production date comes in March, we'll be receiving more news as far as Legendary's Godzilla and Pacific Rim. And so yeah, that's the only kind of piece of news that we've got so far.
Awesome. So well, that ends the news segment, so we are clipping along here. And that was the fourth segment out of, what, 12 for this episode? So we still have a ways to go, which is okay.
Yeah.
let's see. So we're going into the control room segment. The control room. We need to have a little special sound effect where it's like vacuum sealed doors, like, or something like that. And
can we discuss to amongst the audience of what the control room is about and all that?
Oh, the control room is essentially where both Ness and I, during any episode, we pick a kaiju-related topic and we discuss it.
All right.
Our own little rambling, I guess you could say. So, Ness, start us off.
As always, so it's like I know in the past couple episodes, I was wanting to review issue 1 of Godzilla Half-Century War, which later on, I didn't really get around to it until this time around, which I early last week just forced myself into reading.
You finally became unlazy.
Yes, indeed, I have. And so I finished reading Half Century War, and I gotta tell you, I can kind of really see why IGN gave it a 10 out of 10. So, with that in mind, let me talk about what I really want to talk about of issue 1 of Godzilla and the Half Century War. Godzilla Half Century War is one of the most recent mini-comic series released by IDW Publishing, along with their treasure trove of other recent Godzilla comics. The story is based on a narrative of a Japanese lieutenant named Oda Murakami, who has fought Godzilla for 50 years, hence the subtitle of the mini-comic series. Oda's first encounter with Godzilla was in 1954, when he was in his early 20s, when he was 23 months into his enlistment with the JDF, and thus already a lieutenant of a platoon. This is where issue 1 begins the story. I can definitely see how IGN gave this issue a 10 out of 10. The story is very well versed and focusing on a specific man's history and encounters with the King of the Monsters. Issue number 1 also makes you feel like that you're part of the story and really experiencing the first appearance of Godzilla and the horrific destruction that he's caused. It's also a great backstory as to how a new force was created right after Godzilla was destroyed by the Oxygen Destroyer named the Anti-Megalosaurus Force, which kind of coincidence that as I mentioned, the Anti-Megalosaurus Force, it was also, that word was also mentioned in Godzilla X Mechagodzilla.
As coincidentally, well, it's for the movie that we were reviewing this week. In fact, it was introduced here and then probably picked up by the comic writers and then used in the comic.
Yeah. So I think it's kind of a perfect tie-in with both this issue and Godzilla X Mechagodzilla that we're going to be reviewing here in just a bit. So, back to the review. So, I also really enjoyed on how Oda and the other supporting cast in this issue made a reference to Dr. Serizawa and the Oxygen Destroyer. Out of all the Godzilla comics that I have read up to this point, the story to this issue is by far the best one I have encountered. None of the past Godzilla comic stories can't even compare to this one. And as far as the art, at first, when I saw and heard of Godzilla, the Half Century War, for the first time, I thought the art was a little bit odd at first until I delved more into the comic series. As of now, I think that the artwork works fairly well in for the story that's being told. The colors that were used are more in the violet area, which gives a nice uncertainty of what lies ahead for our main character and the supporting cast. There's really not much to add here than just say that the artwork for this comic has really grown onto me, and I really enjoy the style of the art in this comic. And as far as the human drama, it's also another great aspect to the comic so far. And you get to really see how the characters act towards one another and towards Godzilla. The comic is more serious as far as human drama compared to the other Godzilla comics that have been published. This is one of the key components, I think, that that makes this mini comic, you know, just work in its own, you know, way. So overall, I really enjoyed this comic. I can, you know, see why IGN gave this comic a 10 out of 10 out of so many other comics that it has reviewed. And I can say that out of 10 stars, I would also give it 10 out of 10 as well. So I'm really looking forward into reading the rest of the Half-Century War stuff. So it looks very interesting. So if you haven't read the comic yet, I would recommend you purchasing it and reading it. I think you really enjoy it.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. Glad to hear that you really enjoyed it, like so many other people did, apparently. I haven't checked these comics out myself. I'm kind of waiting for the miniseries to wrap up and then hopefully get it out on trade paperback in the hopes that everything will be in one collection. But for
in
me,
one piece.
This particular segment, it's I titled it Yongari or Yongari. The first Yongari is spelled with one G and the other Yongari is spelled with two G's. In all honesty, there's no difference. I just did it that way because that's how some people spell the name of the creature. And basically what I mean by Yongari or Yongari, as in a question, is I kind of got into, I was listening to another podcast where they were reviewing the 67 Yongari film, and one person on that podcast had said that the 67 film was better than the 99/2001 film. And I will explain the difference between the 99 and 2001 film here very shortly. And I kind of thought, really? Seems kind of odd. And so what I ended up doing was, of course, I recently watched the 67 film. And so then this morning, I ended up watching the newer, kind of the remake, so to speak. And in all actuality, one of the interesting facts about the newest film, the 2001 film, is that in some ways it wasn't supposed to be a remake of the 67 film. It was supposed to be a completely different monster in and of itself. And and it just happened to be named Yongari. And so I kind of set off on a quest as far as figuring out what movie I thought was better. Was it the 67 film, or did I think the 2001 film was better? And so I sat down and watched the 2001 film this morning, and I came to a conclusion, which I'm going to keep you on the edge of your seats for the next 45 years. And we'll get through this. And so let's get into some of the interesting facts about
please do
99/2001 film. There were two editions of this film. You had the 99 film and, of course, the 2001 film. And the 01 film is the only version that is available to anyone. And 60% of the original 99 film footage is intact in this 01 film. And the updates that they made to the 01 film, they added new music and updated effects. In some people's eyes, including myself, some of those updated effects didn't look so great, so it makes you wonder how not so great those other effects were in the 99 film. And in the original film, it did not have aliens either, and it had Yongari dying. And in the 99 film, people have said it was supposedly, I guess, a pretty decent remake, even though technically it's not a remake of the 67 film. So, but here's the interesting fact. It is unclear whether or not the Korean studio that produced the 2001 film destroyed the original film in the belief that the 2001 film would be a greater success when they re-released it in 2001. But the 2001 film flopped due to poor marketing, and it is the most expensive Korean film to date, which kind of coincides with the 67 film, which at that time was the most expensive Korean film ever made.
Which is only $50,000.
Yeah, a little over $50,000.
Which kind of surprised me.
So let's kind of get into the heart of this. And most of this I realized after I kind of typed it up and thought about it. A lot of it's going to focus more on the 2001 film. And I think the reason why I do that is because I think a little bit more pressure is put on the newer versions just because of the supposed updated effects, for the most part, at least with these kinds of movies. But I did try to incorporate the 67 film more towards the end of my spiel here. But one of the interesting things that I thought about the 2001 film was just kind of the character development. I felt smarter than most of the scientists in that film. There was a scene with the characters Hughes and Holly where they are trying to decrypt the hieroglyphics in the cave that they had that we see in the earlier part of the film. And as they are decrypting it, there is a word in there that comes up that says Damon. And they immediately, and I immediately am screaming to them. I'm going, it's Diamond. It's Diamond. And I have, and mind you, I haven't seen this film in years. I think the last, I saw like the final 10 or 15 minutes of it at G-Fest on TV there. But I didn't see this portion. But the last time I'd seen this movie in its entirety was probably, my gosh, maybe 8 or 10 years ago.
Yeah, because I think we saw it on Sci-Fi Channel at one point.
Yeah, that was before I purchased the DVD.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I don't remember this part, and I'm immediately screaming at the TV, Diamond, talking about the Diamond. And they are going, Damon, Damon, kind of like they're scratching their heads, Damon, Damon, what does it try to mean? What do they mean by Damon? And I'm yelling at them, it's Diamond!
Diamond!
But then they eventually catch up, and they go, oh, it's Diamond. I'm going, it's but that's one of the, and that's just a little gripe and a lot of bigger problems that the 2001 film has. And don't get me wrong, believe me, I'll talk about this in a little bit. The 67 film has its own big problems too. But the 2001 Yongari film has just awful acting. One of my favorite characters in there is Professor Campbell, and unfortunately, he dies halfway through. He is such a cookie-cutter villain. The actor who portrays him really overacts his lines and is really a phony villain. And some of the dialogue in the film in general is just terrible, but I think some of the most ridiculous lines, not all, but some of the most ridiculous lines come from Professor Campbell himself. And there's this one scene shortly after Yongari is resurrected, where Yongari is getting up on his feet and is walking, and Professor Campbell is going, Professor Campbell is walking up to the creature saying that he can talk to it, and I'm going, oh my gosh, and you're supposed to have a PhD. And so he walks up to Yongari. He's walking towards people, and he's stomping on some of the people. And he goes up, and he goes, I created you! You are my creation! I'm going, I hope you get stomped. And he gets stomped, which made me, on the one hand, kind of happy, but at the same time, sad, because he was such a crazy, crazy character. And the special effects for the 2001 film, I know a lot of people complain about the special effects of this film. And I have to admit, while they certainly are not as good as what a Hollywood-produced film would be at the same time, we have to remember that very few, and I mean very few, international studios could even produce half as good effects. And many of these other studios do not pour the kinds of money into their film budgets like Hollywood does with many of their films. But despite some of the shoddy effects here and there, I think some of the special effects in the 2001 Yongari film are passable to good. They don't age very well, but some of the shots do look good. Even with the scenes when Yongari is revived, for example, the moments when his feet hit the ground and the timing of the explosives in correlation to when his feet meet the ground are very good. But we cannot overlook some of those details, meaning the feet hitting the ground and then the explosions happening, meaning that there is an impact of dirt flying as he makes contact with the ground. And I think those details make up for some of the drawbacks in other areas of the special effects area. But overall, I think the effects work for the 2001 film, while not spectacular nor great, tend to have don't have some of the cringing effect shots in some areas like the 67 film. And the one, well, actually two pop into my head right now. There's this one scene where in the 67 film, Yongri uses his horn has a laser and cuts a Jeep in half. And the guy who's in the front half of the Jeep is sliding along, but you see clear as day this third wheel that keeps it up so the Jeep, so that half of the Jeep doesn't flip over and kill the actor. But they don't do any work in terms of trying to hide that wheel. And there is this also this other shot where Youngery's in the background and there are people in the foreground running. But the people in the foreground running are like 1.5 stories high with these buildings. Like, it's just shot in a horrible proportion. I'll have to take a look at that movie again. I couldn't quite tell if those were miniatures people were running through or if that was some green screen work. But nevertheless, the proportioning wasn't right. And both films suffer from poor story structure and at best mediocre effects work. The 2001 film had a kaiju villain, which is a nice touch in Psycor. And the final battle with Youngery is pretty entertaining. However, the film suffers from acting that is downright laughable and kind of a WTH storyline and uninteresting characters. I can appreciate the effort given by the production team on the 2001 film, but the entertainment value is lost in the film due to the problems I've been talking about. Plus, I think the sheer lack of practical effects, meaning miniature work and suit work, I think the absence of those practical effects take away the possibility of any charm this film could have had. Granted, it was a different time and CGI was dominating many effects in films, especially in Hollywood films, and I believe the studio was going for something they could be proud of and also try to make their mark on the international film scene, because that was the hope with this film, kind of like what they tried in 67. They hoped that this 2001 film would really make a mark in international filming and kind of put South Korea on the film map, so to speak, and attract bigger projects and bigger actors, but obviously that didn't happen. But as stated earlier, though, not all the effects work on the 2001 film is bad, nor is it as bad as some people say it is. But the acting in 67 film, although not great either, is a bit better. The practical effects help with the aging of that film a little bit and bring some charm to the movie as well. The 67 film suffers from a message problem in that it doesn't know whether it wants to sympathize with Youngery or go against him. And some of the dialogue is just bad, and there are plot holes galore within that film as well. And some effects work is absolutely fantastic, while it is abysmal in other parts of the movie, hence those two effects scenes that I described a moment ago. And the suit isn't great either in the 67 film, but it's passable. It'll work. And so, kind of what are my final thoughts here? Which movie do I think is better than the other? While neither film is far from perfect and they both suffer mightily from similar issues, I pick the 67 film simply because I find it more entertaining. The practical effects, I honestly believe, help make the film more entertaining for me. The special effects in the 2001 film are decent but aren't good enough to make me wholly believe that there's a kaiju there. It actually kind of takes me out of the movie for the most part because I just don't believe the monster is actually there. Not to mention the 2001 film drags on. It takes its sweet time trying to get the story going. And sure, there are plenty of moments with Youngery, I have to admit, in the 2001 film. Some of those scenes should have either been cut down or more action should have been added to those scenes to make them more entertaining. And the final battle with Psycor is definitely the film's high point. And the 67 film has entertainment value that I find to be on par with the Godzilla and Gamera films of the same period. I still recommend seeing both films, however, and to me, the 2001 film is better viewed if you are with a group of people and want to do an MSTK3. MST3K.
Yeah.
Boy, I screwed that up. MST3K. Version, because I think you can really, I think in all honesty you can make fun of both films, but you can definitely make fun of, I think, the 2001 film more, just because there are, the actors are essentially American with the exception of like two or three, and the acting and dialogue is awful, just absolutely awful, especially Professor Campbell. Once again, my favorite character. So that one is better viewed with friends. But I still recommend seeing both. And I own both, and while I can honestly say that I'll probably watch the 67 film more often than the 2001, I am glad that I do own both. I think that if you are big Daikaiju fans, such as we are, I think they would be nice additions to your collection. And they're fun watches every once in a while. And, you know, you may disagree and thinking that the 2001 film is better, and that's fine. But I personally think the 67 film is better.
Awesome. So pretty much with that left in mind, our next segment is reviewing Godzilla X Mechagodzilla. And I would just like to say before we dive into the review that as of yesterday, the film celebrated its 10th anniversary of its release.
Yeah, hard to believe 10 years ago.
I know.
I remember,
right?
When this thing came out on DVD in the U.S. That was what,
2003? 2002.
2003? I'm talking about when the DVD came out here in the U.S.
I don't know, but I know it was released December 15th, 2002 in Japan, but I have no idea when it was released here. So, as far as I know, it's been out for 10 years as of yesterday, as this podcast has been recorded. Which one of us wants to do the review first? Do you want to start off, Nick?
I can go first.
Okay.
Wow, yeah, it's a good thing we have a camera because I can hear you. Once again, I'm having issues here in Ness going in and out with his volume, and so that's why we have a camera,
Nick,
so we can kind of see when
issues.
If the person is done talking. And
but I know with our little recording program and stuff, I know it'll still pick me up and all that.
Well, that's good.
So, yeah.
Yeah! That was weird. Okay, so before I get into the actual review itself, I think it's very important for me to kind of give my thoughts on this movie over the 8 or 9 years that it's been on DVD here in the U.S. and that I've watched it over that period of time. And as most of you may be aware of, at least when we did the review of Godzilla X Megaguirus, what, like 4 or 5 episodes ago, I believe I mentioned that I am not a fan of, or at the time, I guess I should say that I was mentioning I was not a huge fan of Masaki Tezuka's Godzilla films. I just thought, with the exception of Tokyo SOS, I thought they were pretty weak films in the franchise, and I've been really trying to like them more. And I'm not saying they're horrible, I just found them in many ways to be dull and not as entertaining as other Godzilla films. But I must say that this film, I did believe, was a little bit better than Megaguirus, just because it had a slightly better story. And initially, and really over the years since, I was a bit disappointed in the overall movie. And it was not as dramatic and exciting as I'd hoped it to be. I always found it to be dull. And at times, too, it was hard for me to distinguish between this film and Tokyo SOS because, you know, obviously these two movies are sequels or in connection with one another. Excuse me. And they kind of seemed to blend in together, and I always thought Tokyo SOS was the superior Masaki Tezuka film. And I remember when this movie was in production / getting ready to be released in Japan, I remember seeing the poster, which is the cover of the U.S. DVD release of this movie, which I thought, oh my gosh, this is going to be awesome. You know, this Mechagodzilla looks to be much more agile, look much more menacing. This is going to be an awesome movie. And then I watched it. I'm going, wow, this was not what I was expecting. And I was just disappointed by it. But have my thoughts changed on this movie with the most recent viewing of this film? We shall find out, my lumpkins. And
I like how you said that.
What?
So, I like how you said that.
Hey, that's what I'm here for, to provide comedy. The movie starts off with action immediately, and Godzilla's entrance is awesome, as well as the ensuing rampage within the countryside and the military going after him. It's great to see the Mazer tanks back. In fact, if I recall, there weren't any other Mazer tanks that had been used in the Millennium film, so it was great to see them back. The anti-Megalosaurus force is unique and fun to see, and we get a nice exposition of Godzilla from 1954, signaling the previous films didn't happen. Surprise, 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 which, of course, we all know by this point in time is a theme throughout the Millennium series.
Pretty much.
And scenes from Mothra and War of the Gargantuas are shown earlier in the film after, of course, the title credits have been shown, that explain Japan's kaiju problem and the need for the anti-megalosaur force, which I'm going to call the AMF here from now on for the rest of the review. Sadly, the history in that is wrong. In that exposition done by Kumi Mizuno's character, who at the earlier part of the movie is the prime minister, she said Mothra was destroyed by heat rays and the government destroyed Gaira with the Mazers. While this is incorrect, I started thinking and kind of wondered, you know, anyone who's seen those movies knows that not only did Mothra not die in that film, she survived. Spoiler alert. for those of you who haven't seen it, I'm positive most of you have. And the fact, too, that Gaira didn't die from the Mazers. In fact, he and his kind of,
Sanda.
I guess you could say, twin brother Sanda ended up battling each other in Tokyo Bay and got swallowed up by an underwater volcano. I think because of the Millennium series, and they're always restarting the Godzilla timeline, for example, with each new movie, with the exception of Tokyo SOS, I think we're supposed to retcon Mothra and War of the Gargantuas along with the entire G series so that the sub-stories within these films fit well for the particular movie that we're watching, which I'm okay with if that was the point. But otherwise, the obviously the core, the history is wrong with those two things being said by Kumi Mizuno's character. I find it interesting that weapons of mass destructions are briefly discussed when the anti-Godzilla superweapon legislation is passed, a.k.a. the legislation to start the Mechagodzilla / Kiyu project. It's a sign of the times with the war on terror and the soon-to-be war in Iraq that was going to be coming up very, very soon. And kind of getting into some of the character and a little bit of the dubbing, which is something I don't normally do when it comes to reviews, because I look to be dubbing as something that is not part of the original film. The dubbing of Sarah Uehara is really off. She sounds like she's in her early 20s rather than a girl who's between the ages of 7 and 11.
I know.
It's, you know, like a 7-year-old boy going, "Hi, Dad, can you take me to work? Can we go somewhere? Can we get a coffee?"
You know, when you were talking about that, it kind of reminded me of one of the boys from Gamera vs. Giron, which I kind of mentioned that in my review of this film. So she kind of sounded and acted
it's
like
interesting.
That.
It just doesn't fit. The girl who dubbed her should have dubbed a different character was more age appropriate. And I find it a little strange that Godzilla conveniently doesn't show up for 4 years while the government is building Mechagodzilla. And so what happens is that earlier in the movie, our main character, Akane, is part of the AMF. And one of her partners gets killed in the opening Godzilla rampage. And so 4 years have passed after the anti-Godzilla superweapon legislation is passed. And during this time, what they're doing is they're taking the bones of the 54 Godzilla and they're going to build Mechagodzilla around him, which I think is pretty cool. Pretty cool idea. I remember hearing news about this and I thought, wow, that's pretty cool. That's pretty interesting. And it's a very interesting Mechagodzilla story. But I think in some ways, at least in one small part of the movie, I think it hurts it. And I'll get to that in a moment. But I just thought it was convenient that Godzilla doesn't show up for 4 years while they're building Mechagodzilla. It's just kind of weird.
Yeah.
But at the same time, though, too, here's another plot hole. I find it also weird that somehow Sarah doesn't grow up or age in those 4 years. If any of you have seen the Rocky V movie, realize that when Rocky comes home from the Soviet Union, his boy somehow aged about 5 years. I'm thinking it's the Rocky V syndrome, only in reverse.
Yeah.
Or maybe she's a midget because she does have a job at a coffee shop.
Or just an ageless person.
Which is a sign that she should be older, but who knows? I mean, I think, in all honesty, I think it's bad writing, but I love retconning some of these movies because it's sometimes funnier.
Yeah.
But also, just some other weird stuff that I'm going to ramble on here for a moment. Also, Hayama is getting in Akane's face about the death of his brother 4 years after the event, and that doesn't make sense to me because in actuality, if such an event were to occur, he more than likely would have faced her much sooner after the event had occurred. And while, of course, reality is something that lacks in the Godzilla series, which is A-okay, I think it hurts some of the stories and some of the plot in terms of character structure and development within this movie. But it's nothing that is detrimental or is permanently going to harm the film. But I just find it in terms of I just forgot the word. Logic, I guess, maybe. It doesn't work. But on a side note, though, Yusuke Tomoe, who plays Hayama, I think he does a very good job of creating a giant douchebag character. He's the kind of character that you really love to root against. You're rooting for Akane to punch him in the face. But also, a short bit after that scene, we get to my favorite scene of the movie, just because I find it extremely hilarious. And it is the scene in the movie in which they demonstrate the absolute zero cannon on Mechagodzilla. And when they shoot it off, you get people going, "Oh my God, look at that. Did you see that? Holy cow, I about pooped myself." I just thought that was very, very, very hilarious.
Did they actually say that?
The awful acting and dialogue within that scene. But I thought the discussion of how long Mechagodzilla could battle was a nice detail in that one particular scene as well, that it could be repowered with microwaves. And I'm not going to go off on that side note, which is pretty funny. It's kind of an inside joke between Ness and myself. But the first battle between Mechagodzilla and Godzilla, though, I have to say, is awful. And this is the one thing that's bothered me most about this particular movie. Godzilla, he postures an awful lot. Well, really, that's the only thing he does in this battle is that he postures. He just takes there and takes Mechagodzilla's onslaught. Although I have a theory possibly that could explain this, but I think it's wrong because I debunk my own theory. My theory is that he could sense that the 54 Godzilla's bones were inside Mechagodzilla, and that's why he didn't attack. And so here's where I debunk myself. Even then, if he could sense the Godzilla bones inside Mechagodzilla, same animals of the same species fight each other all the time in the wild. So, yeah. Why he didn't fight back, I think, is stupid. And that's one of the reasons why I just thought Masaki Tezuka's portrayal of Godzilla in this portion of the film was off. I still find it really odd Godzilla didn't retaliate. In the scene, I believe this scene has more of a purposeful setup for Mechagodzilla's story by having it go berserk throughout Tokyo. And it's a nice rampage, though, regardless of some of the problems with the scene. It's always nice to see a bunch of miniature buildings get blown up. There seems to be a theme in this movie, and that theme is that every life is important. And while it's nicely done for this movie in particular, it is too heavy-handed in some areas, like when Akane goes and visits Sarah and has this discussion on how no one will miss her when her life, that meaning Akane's life, ends. So we kind of fast forward and all that through the film. And during the final battle with Godzilla, after Mechagodzilla was able to knock Godzilla out temporarily, those in the AMF HQ mentioned they have to finish the battle quickly due to Mechagodzilla only having 45% energy remaining. But then they mentioned they would have to black out Tokyo to fully replenish Mechagodzilla. This, to me, doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but even so, why didn't they try to replenish Mechagodzilla while it was fighting Godzilla earlier? It's funny how they turn the electricity off at one of the hospital units, and I'm sure many other hospital units. What if some of the people were being kept alive due to medicines some machines were providing them? If that is the case, the Prime Minister just committed murder, which I just find really odd. That's kind of my morbid sense of humor, though, with it. But at the same time, you see a satellite picture of Tokyo going black. There's not a single light anywhere. But it's pretty funny. But I just thought it was funny too. Here's just some of the things I was kind of laughing at a little bit as I watched this movie. When Akane is inside Mechagodzilla, and this is after Mechagodzilla kind of got blown after it tried using the Absolute Zero cannon on Godzilla, and the controls up in her Heron aircraft didn't work. Akane yells out, "Kiyu, power! Give me power!" I was halfway expecting either her to pull out the He-Man power sword or for He-Man himself to show up. I still find it funny when Akane releases Hayama's jet from Godzilla's mouth, and the jet explodes as Hayama escapes, and it jerks him back, and he goes, "Duh!" Like, it's so funny. It's like, for one thing, he should have died considering the proximity of that explosion, but it's just so funny how the effects jerk him backwards.
Or probably at least have him, you know, get some shrapnel or some burns from the explosion, at least.
Yeah, no kidding. And so I'm going to go a little bit more into kind of the review aspect of the movie. The special effects I thought were great, including the miniatures and the kaiju suits. Some of the green screen work, while not perfect in every scene, it was grainy in some areas. I still thought it was really good. And the miniature work of Tokyo during the final battle was absolutely superb, and the amount of attention paid to the detail was phenomenal. Michiro Ushima's score is one that fits with Godzilla's character, and her Godzilla theme does stick out in my head sometimes. And I believe her to be one of the better composers of the series. And the human drama is a lot better than I remember. Professor Yuhara's constant attempts at trying to get Akane to go out with him are corny, which is what makes his character so much fun. But they help flesh out the two distinctly different personalities of Akane and Professor Yuhara. Sarah is a nice character that complements Akane and her dad, but her character has a weird departure from the film in which she asked her dad, "Where is she?" as she continues to cry. Is she referring to Akane or her mother, who is mentioned of dying earlier in the film from childbirth? Either way, her character doesn't have much of a story arc like the other characters, and the way they transform her from a vibrant child at the beginning of the film to a depressed one by the end is understandable due to how the events of the story itself unfold, but it's weird, and they make her character in some respects incomplete, which is a shame because I really liked Sarah, but then I'm left wondering, what happened here? The kaiju battles are a mixed bag. I only say this because of the first encounter is a complete bore and only meant to add more to the Mechagodzilla story arc, which is fine, but it would have been nice if more of a battle had taken place before Mechagodzilla went berserk. Instead, we're left with a posturing, dumbfounded Godzilla and an unsatisfying battle. The final battle, though, however, does make up for the shortcomings of the first quote-unquote battle. While the final battle starts off with who can hug the other into submission, it does take off into a more entertaining fight that shows a Godzilla determined to take out Mechagodzilla. So what are my final thoughts? Well, I will tell you in a very, very long paragraph. It must be stated that when I end up reviewing this film for my blog, Godzilla's Kingdom, that is, the rating system may be different. because while I did watch this film with a critical eye, I didn't slice and dice it like I do for my blog entries. But Godzilla X Mechagodzilla, I have to admit, is a better film than I gave it credit. Over the last 9 or so years, I have seen this film as a very weak entry in the Millennium series and the Godzilla franchise as a whole. Instead, I believe it to be one of the stronger entries in the Millennium era and right in the middle of the rest of the series. The film is far from perfect, though. Certain items dealing with 4 years having gone by messed with the plot earlier in the film. The film does focus more on Mechagodzilla than Godzilla. In fact, I will go as far as to say that Godzilla is nothing but a means to an end to show off the new Mechagodzilla design and to design a story around Mechagodzilla, essentially to give Mechagodzilla an opponent to fight. While I am not completely opposed to that, it does take a bit away from Godzilla and the city smashing we've come to expect in most Godzilla films. And speaking of Mechagodzilla, usually with Mechagodzilla in a film, it signals a really strong opponent for Godzilla in a literal battle to the death. While to some degree we get that with this incarnation of Mechagodzilla, I never felt the level of threat was as high with this Mechagodzilla as opposed to the two previous versions of this kaiju, but this is a very small gripe. Sarah's non-existent story arc leaves me scratching my head as to why her character was essentially dumped where she was without any sort of conclusion to her story. She's left crying without a whole lot of explanation as to which she is referring to, and to leave her depressed does her character an injustice, in my opinion. But the film does have a strong character-driven story that's probably one of the better ones in the entire franchise, though definitely not the best, in my opinion. I do believe we get better stories, for example, in Mothra vs. Godzilla, Monster Zero, and even the first Godzilla film. The actors do a tremendous job, however, portraying their characters' strong and weak points while providing a diversity of personalities on screen. The special effects are some of the best in the entire franchise, and the final battle does make up for the awful first quote-unquote battle. Godzilla X Mechagodzilla is a movie that I believe every Godzilla fan needs to see. While the Godzilla action is a bit sparse in this movie, compared to other movies in the franchise, it opens and ends with some great action. In the middle, we get a brief Godzilla scene with Mechagodzilla, but the human drama is so interesting that it carries the movie pretty well. In the end, I give Godzilla X Mechagodzilla an 8.9 out of 10 stars.
All right. Time for my overview on this film. And I just... it's like I haven't seen this film maybe for about a few years or so. So here's kind of my little take about it. Just when you thought that director Masaki Tezuka would only have a one-shot directorial project with Godzilla vs. Megaguirus, only to be brought back again not only just for this film, but for the film sequel as well. However, the review is just reserved for Godzilla vs. Mechagodzilla, not for GMMG Tokyo SOS. Anywho, with the mixed review that Godzilla vs. Megaguirus left among fans, we weren't entirely sure what to expect with the film, with Masaki Tezuka at the helm once again. But once Godzilla X Mechagodzilla was released, we were a little surprised on how it turned out. Tezuka did a bit better this time around, story-wise, in cinematography. However, to my mind, the film still fell short, just like Godzilla X Mechagodzilla's. The visuals, acting, and human drama were the culprits that let this film down. The story to this film is better than I actually thought, as I said earlier, when I saw this film. Wataru Nomura returns from Godzilla X Mechagodzilla to script this film without Hiroshi Kashiwabara. It seemed that Nomura took his time to flesh out to what we see in the film and to put quite a bit of detail into it. The story was executed fairly well and seemed that a lot was clicking and made sense. And I liked how it tied the past films and getting the remains of the 1954 Godzilla involved and building Mechagodzilla around it. And also, it uses less resources, a lot more such, instead of using a lot more such as the Mechagodzilla in the 1993 film Godzilla vs. Mechagodzilla. In my opinion, this probably has to be the most efficient Mechagodzilla ever built thus far. Anyways, the story is not one of the best or worst stories in the recent franchise, but a story I think is better than Godzilla, Mothra, King Ghidorah, Giant Monsters, All Out Attack. The story, of course, it focuses more on the science fiction realm that dominates the Godzilla universe, unlike GMK, which focuses more on the fantasy and mythology realm. And as far as visual effects, there are some aspects in the Godzilla X Mechagodzilla where the visual effects were good, and all of that was used for Godzilla and Mechagodzilla when they fired their weapons. Other than that, the visuals weren't all that great. You can really tell when the green screen was used and makes it seem not as convincing. A good example of a non-convincing visual effect in this film was when Akane Yoshiro and her other comrades rescued their comrades as well from the damaged aircraft when they were a good distance away from the aircraft, it explodes behind them. And that part about that particular scene was when you obviously noticed they were using a green screen and the explosion visual did not look great at all. Visuals used for Godzilla's and Mechagodzilla's weapons were the only ones that really showcased this category, but couldn't hold the weight because of the outside mediocre visuals. On acting, so far it seemed that Misaki's signature in both Godzilla X Mechagodzilla and this film is having a female lead that had a dark past, which had Godzilla directly involved while serving in the military. In this case, for this film, however, this is where I think Tezuka and Nomura went a little too far when betraying the female lead and made her a little too emo-ish and dense. Like, it didn't seem like that Akane really didn't really fit with the film at all and was in a totally different world than the rest of the cast. And this can be said for Tokumitsu Yuhara's daughter, Sarah, later in the film when she mysteriously became just like Akane. I want to say that the acting portion is great because of the supporting cast members, but the acting from the lead role practically ruined that part of the experience for me. As far as the battle portions of the film were pretty much the only thing that makes the film interesting. The part that I really enjoyed the most was just towards the end of the first battle, once Godzilla, roars and all that, it made Mechagodzilla's computers go berserk, rewired the program and turned him into the 1954 Godzilla. And I thought that was a great touch, since Mechagodzilla's computing is based on the 1954 Godzilla's DNA. And the second part of the battles, I think, was a bit better than the first one, I have to say as well. In that the two didn't have much of an advantage against one another, which it was an even match, and which is another aspect that I enjoyed in this film. There were a couple things that were a bit off and looked a bit odd during the battle scenes, but were quickly overshadowed. And on the human drama, again, just kind of why, just like the acting portion alone with Akane and Sarah, they seem too dense and emo-ish, although Sarah wasn't like that earlier in the film when she was all cheerful and to me, and kind of like what I said during Nick's review on the film, that she acted like one of the boys from Gamera vs. Gearon. And somehow, though, when the story's timeline got to 2003, 4 years after, in the earlier parts of the film, she went from all smiles and cheers to gloom and depressed without any expression or explanations whatsoever. The other cast members seem to be the only normal and consistent ones in this film, minus Sarah. They were more interesting to watch than Akane, although Takumitsu seemed a bit crazy at times when chasing Akane, but he's still interesting to watch nonetheless. Unlikely, though, they were overshadowed by Akane's dense and over-dramatized act, which dilutes the value of both acting and human drama portions of this film. Overall, as I stated earlier, this is one of Tezuka's better Godzilla films, but barely, though. Godzilla X Mechagodzilla still carried some of the same formulas that made Godzilla X Megaguirus fall short of its expectations. Story, however, it has improved under Tezuka and gave Nomura more space on creativity in doing the script on its own. But the denseness of the female lead still gets to me, even Sarah, which I don't even know why she was like that later in the film. And I think this is where both Megaguirus and Mechagodzilla films fall short, because the female leads are over-dramatized and don't have much emotion towards themselves and others. And it might take me quite some time to start enjoying this film, but with the film already celebrating its decade of its release as of yesterday, in all, I'm still mixed about the film, much like Megaguirus. However, I have to say that this film is better than Megaguirus, so at least Tezuka did something right to this film. And out of 10 stars I give this film, I would give it a 5 out of 10.
Oh, wow. Middle of the road. So you're really bent out of shape about this female character.
I am. It just doesn't seem... It just doesn't fit right into the Godzilla universe from, as a, you know, throughout the entire franchise. It just doesn't really mix well to me. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's... I found myself liking this film more since I watched it recently, but I have to admit that for a kaiju film, it's still pretty decent. I still think the story is somewhat solid, but there are issues with it. But I do think, though, too, that more than anything else, as we watch these films for the monsters more than anything else, unfortunately, as a result, the monster action, I think, comes up short in this film, which is my biggest gripe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just kind of like with me, where I kind of like the battles, and then you don't, and then you like the human drama and the acting, which that's kind of my biggest gripe about this film. It's because of the female lead, Akane Yashiro, which kind of pretty much dilutes the true potent, which, I mean, it could have, if she didn't act that way, there could have been more potential to her character, and then it would have shown better along with the supporting cast, I like the supporting cast of the film. I mean, they were pretty much like the normal ones, and then they acted right for the for those roles and all that, but I mean, it just to me the lead role and as well as Sarah, they just didn't seem like they didn't fit well in that film to me.
Yeah, the human drama is far from perfect, but I do think, and this was something I was thinking after I watched the film here the other day. I do believe that the human drama in this movie, though, kind of like you mentioned earlier, is better than what we get out of GMK.
Mm-hmm.
I think in some ways, not in every way, but in some ways, this film is a little bit better than GMK in some areas. Not entirely, but I do think in human drama, it's definitely better than GMK. GMK, as I mentioned in last month's review, the human drama and the characters were boring and uninteresting to me. But yeah, we don't need to go revisit GMK right now just because we just did that.
Yeah!
I find that interesting. I actually thought you probably would have enjoyed this film a little bit more than I would have.
Well, you thought wrong, man.
Yeah, but we'll do some interesting facts, and I realize I forgot to do this with GMK last month, but we're going to make up for it by doing it here. We're going to give you some numbers just to kind of give you an idea as far as Godzilla X Mechagodzilla in the box office and how much it took to produce and whatnot. And remember, the dollar figures that I give you in this section, they are the dollar figures that are reflected right now in right now's dollar amount. They do not reflect the 2002 dollar amount from a decade ago, which it would be less than that, just because, you know, with economies fluctuating and inflation and all that fun. But it took 1 billion yen to make in 2002, which is about $11,976,000 today. So it's probably a little less than 11 million in 2002 dollars. My guess is maybe, and I'm just throwing a number out there, I don't know for sure, but my guess is that it's maybe 10.5 million in 2002 dollars. But that if anyone knows the true answer to that, please let us know. It made about 267 million yen opening weekend, which is about $3.2 million today. For a U.S. movie, that's pretty weak, but, you know, this is not a U.S. movie. And I think ticket sales in Japan, or ticket prices, I should say, I think are cheaper in Japan, I think. But don't quote me on that. And the film ended up grossing 1,910 million yen, which is about $23 million today. So the movie did make money. Rotten Tomatoes gave the movie a 65%, which is a fresh rating, which actually surprised me. I wasn't expecting the Rotten Tomatoes to give it a fresh rating, which also, by the way, takes me back to the two Yongari films, and I was looking on Rotten Tomatoes today just for curiosity purposes. Both films got a rotten rating from Rotten Tomatoes. However, the 67 film is more fresh at 27%, where the 2001 film is at 17%. So, you know, just take that for what it's worth.
Nice,
but I have to ask you a question. What? I couldn't hear that.
No, nothing.
But a question has to be asked, because now we're in the final two films of Mechagodzilla. And since we've already been through now officially three different designs of Mechagodzilla, which design do you like better?
So this is my turn, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Read the notes.
I don't know. It's just, you probably would change something at the last second, like you always do, always. So, oh wow. It's like we're showing a video feed to one another, and all of a sudden, it's like some strange reason, I always the video feed on next, and it always keeps flipping upside down like every now and then. So, but anyways, back to the question on which Mechagodzilla design we like better. Kind of like what I said in my review here, that this newest version of Mechagodzilla, I think by far is the most efficient Mechagodzilla, and I think it uses much less resources
Well, I'm talking about, like, which design do you like better, not what do you think is, like, better in terms
of
fighting.
Well, just let me get to the point here. I mean, I think it uses much less resources compared to the first and the second versions of Mechagodzilla, but as far as that, is it really that powerful to me? As far as I can remember, comparing to the three designs, I think it's not as that powerful in compared to which I think is the most powerful one is the second version of Mechagodzilla, because I think it has more weapons built into it than the first Mechagodzilla, which was built by aliens, unlike the last two Mechagodzilla designs, which were built by humans. Although, it probably, I would say that the most deadliest weapon out of all that these Mechagodzillas has had would have to be the Absolute Zero that the third version has carried. So, as far as what design that I like best out of all three of these Mechagodzilla designs, I would have to go with the third one, just because it looks more is like the what are you doing? Trying to consult
just
with
not
me
in
there?
My head, saying that
okay.
I understand where you're coming from.
Okay, yeah, so I can do that too. So, anyways, I like the third one just because, I mean, it looks more like Godzilla himself compared to the previous two designs, which, I mean, they say that it looks like Godzilla in the ways, but it didn't quite seem all, you know, like Godzilla in the ways, but the third one resembled more like him. It's acted more like him, and
I like how you're using your super deformed toy.
Yeah, I know. I just I don't know, just subconsciously just picked him up since we're talking about
you're in
it.
Love with him. Go ahead and kiss him. There we go.
Yeah,
now pet him.
No.
Yeah, you just did.
So to me, that's what I think is the best design of the three is the third version of Mechagodzilla. I mean, it resembles more of Godzilla in a way. And I think it was more of a better competition for Godzilla. And it didn't seem too one-sided like some of the other past Mechagodzilla films. They seemed to be more on par with one another in that they weren't one-sided towards one another and all that. I mean, I think that's kind of the reason why I like the third design. It wasn't too powerful or too weak. It was kind of more in the middle. So, yeah, that's my opinion on which design I like better.
I really like all three designs for different reasons. I'm going to be a jerk and say all three. No, okay. I'm not actually going to do that.
I was like, that can't be your explanation at all.
I couldn't even hear a darn word you just said there, unfortunately.
Because you're an idiot, that's why.
But anyways, outside of the fact that I'm supposedly an idiot, it's tough for me. I mean, like I said, I like all three for different reasons. The original one is definitely menacing looking with the rigidness and the design, just the design in and of itself. The second one I would say is the less menacing looking out of all three Mechagodzillas. And I do like the design and to a certain degree kind of the mechanics behind the third one. And it's really tough for me. And I would say really, I'm going to say definitely not the first one. And so it's kind of between the second one and the third one. And so I am, I'm kind of torn, but I'm going to go with the third one just because I like the weapons that are involved with the second one, especially when you get the Garuda hooked up to it and it becomes Super Mecha Godzilla. And I like the plasma grenade cannon, which is pretty neat. And, excuse me, also the fact that that particular Mechagodzilla actually killed Godzilla, too. So I think while the other two look more menacing and to a certain degree cooler, I do like the weapon set of the second one. And I do, to a certain degree, like the somewhat throwback look of that particular Mechagodzilla as well. But also the fact, more than anything else, this proved to be a more powerful Mechagodzilla in that it killed Godzilla. So I would have to go with the 93 version of this film.
Okay. Since that we've already done half of what we have on our schedule here.
Yes.
I was thinking of doing a break and then come back with our next segment, which is a requested one from one of our fans, and it's a dream match between Titanosaurus and King Kong. So let's take a break here, and then we'll be right back after this.
Message from Honey Nut Cheerios.
No.
The only fruity pebbles in a bowl. Oh, here comes you know who. Yabba dabba fruit, delicious do. Oh, ho, ho, I'm hungry.
Santa, my pebbles!
Your pebbles! 'Tis the season to be sharing, Fred.
Happy holidays, pal.
Oh, Fred.
Fruity and Cocoa Pebble cereals, part of this nutritious breakfast. Ho, 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 ho.
Something for Santa?
Look what I brought you, Santa. Holiday chocolate.
Oh, they're red and green.
Mom brought them home for the family. Let's save the best for you.
Holiday's chocolates. Delicious milk chocolate in red and green shells.
Now about my list.
There's nothing like holidays for your holidays from the makers of M&M's chocolate candies.
More?
And thank you, Honey Nut Cheerios B.
Come on.
That's not the first time I've done that.
Still.
All right. So here we are. We're back.
Yes. We're we are here now.
Segment now of the show, The Dream Matches. And what we're going to be discussing here was a match brought up by William Brim on the Godzilla Planet Facebook page. He wanted us to know what our thoughts were as far as who'd win in the matchup between Titanosaurus and King Kong. So, Ness, you seem to be an intelligent individual, so explain it to us.
Yeah, because the reason is that it was just posted on the Godzilla Planet forums by another member of ours, Soviet Kiyu. And I'm probably guessing this is where William got the idea from and wanted our input on who would win this bout. And I've actually replied on that forum post that Soviet Q posted up.
Soviet Q, I like that. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. And pretty much my response to that, he didn't really specifically have what King Kong, like what version of King Kong.
I think we have to assume it's the 62 version.
Yeah, but either way, whichever one he was specifically talking about, even if it was the 62 one, I still would say that King Kong would pretty much dominate this match.
because to me, it seems like that Titanosaurus from seeing even though I haven't seen Terra Mechagodzilla for quite some time, I still know, you know, of course, his capabilities and all that. And it seems to me that he relies more on his tail and creating these hurricane-type winds, and then kind of bringing about all of this debris and all that onto the onto his opponent. But to me, that's not much of a like effective weapon at all. And it seems like that he doesn't really trust much of his physical abilities. Stop typing. And yes, stop typing. Follow the rules. But yeah, to me, King Kong would definitely win this because he's more agile and he has much more brute force, and he uses and trusts his physical strength than, say, Titanosaurus. And I mean, his Titanosaurus' tail would do only a little bit, kind of somewhat distract King Kong, but it won't do much to him. All King Kong would do is just, you know, just try to get at Titanosaurus, since he's more of a close-up fighter than compared to some of the other monsters that have power and don't really rely much on physical strength, unlike Kong does. So, to me, agility, brute force, and intelligence is the key to winning this match, which King Kong obviously has those three things. So that's my take on the dream match between Titanosaurus and Kong.
I agree with you as far as the outcome. I do believe King Kong is going to win for really some of the reasons that you said there. Titanosaurus, we cannot dismiss him, though. I do believe he will put up a good fight with Kong, and I do believe to a certain degree his hurricane force winds caused by his fanned tail could exhaust Kong. Not damage him, but exhaust him. Because, you know, as we sometimes will go out on a windy day to fly a kite or have a picnic or to fumigate mosquitoes, we get exhausted just because that wind is so strong. It just takes the wind out of us. But
nice joke there.
Yeah, pun intended.
But I think with that could also be a double-edged sword with Titanosaurus, which could also exhaust him as well. Keep repeating that, tail whipping a lot, just to create those hurricane force winds.
I mean, I think it'll keep him at bay. Kong, that is, keep Kong at bay with the tail force winds. The only thing Titanosaurus doesn't have going for him, I don't think he has quite the tenacity, so to speak. I mean, I think both kaiju have the tenacity. But Kong seems to have more agility and more tenacity to him, which I think will ultimately push him over the top against Titanosaurus. I just keep picturing, for some odd reason, Kong grabbing Titanosaurus, kind of like his head underneath his arm, kind of like this. And just lifting him up and breaking his neck or something,
or
really
just
morbid like
just,
that.
Or just grabbing him by the neck and then just snap it. There you go.
Or like you take this, and those at home can't see it, but like this here is Titanosaurus's neck, and he punches a hole. that's just me being funny. But in all seriousness, though, I do believe Kong is going to end up winning this. Titanosaurus, I think, is going to put up a fight, but Kong, I think, is stronger. His arms are longer, so he doesn't have to get quite as close as Titanosaurus does with hand-to-hand combat. But still. I just think Kong has more tenacity. His arms are going to help him a little bit more. And he's just, I think he has more brute force behind him.
Mm-hmm. Cool beans. Well, that kind of pretty much does it for Dream Mask. So practically Kong, to us, would win that bout easily. So
yeah, it's pretty unanimous.
Yeah, pretty much. So, yeah. Onwards to the next segment. Yeah. Take it off, Nick.
Oh, I thought we were at Tune It Up. I'm like, I'm not ready for that. okay, so this segment...
yeah, okay.
I titled it on our notes as Worst Godzilla Movies? Question mark. As you can tell by the inflection of my voice, Worst Godzilla Movies? Kind of an upwards inflection.
I'm Ron Burgundy?
I'm Ron Burgundy? Oh, who put the question mark in there? You know Ron reads everything on the teleprompter. I watched that for the first time in years, like 3 weeks ago. But
yeah, do you know that they're making a sequel to that?
I do. but anyways, I just kind of thought it was very interesting how some fans, or even the fandom as a whole, that is the Godzilla fandom, seem to be obsessed with kind of what they think is the best, but more than anything else, at least in the recent years, as far as what they believe to be the worst Godzilla film. And many people are like Ness and myself, that they don't absolutely hate any Godzilla movies. They just have preferred favorites over others. But when they mean by worst, they kind of mean more in the sense of like worst produced, worst story, kind of like the lowest entertainment value, etc. So it just kind of got me thinking and got me pretty curious as to, you know, why are they so obsessed in the fandom with thinking about this? And more particularly around the two, maybe three movies that seem to come up more often when this discussion pops up. And the two movies that always seem to pop up in this discussion are Godzilla vs. Megalon and Godzilla's Revenge. And I would say to a certain degree, just because this movie has caused quite kind of a split, I guess you could say, within the Godzilla fandom as far as people who really love it and people who really don't like it. Godzilla Final Wars, and some people even saying that is one of the worst films. And I've even heard some people bring up Godzilla versus Space Godzilla as well.
Before you go further, I'm kind of surprised that in the itinerary that you didn't put down the 98 version of Godzilla, because I know we hear a lot of people, dissing that particular film.
We do, but I think because since Final Wars, a lot of people do accept that movie, they just don't accept it as a Godzilla movie anymore. And I've really believed it. Well, and two, a lot of fans don't consider that a Godzilla film anymore, which I do. So, if you don't like the Godzilla 98 movie and, you think I'm weird for that, then you can go ahead and keep thinking I'm weird. But that's one of my favorite Godzilla movies, and I do consider it a Godzilla film. But yeah, fans don't really consider that. Most fans, anyways, do not consider that an actual Godzilla film. They look at that as a separate kaiju film. I think they're wrong, but, that's one's own opinion of it. But I just think I want the two of us, two pretty savvy Godzilla fans
mono
here.
Mono.
I can't hear a thing you just said there.
Well, then don't say anything. Okay.
You told me not to say anything. But I just kind of thought it was very interesting about this. And so I want to dive into these three movies and kind of give my own two cents worth. And I guess you could say to a small degree, these are slight reviews, but more or less kind of our general opinions and analysis on this, and we're going to look at just these three movies in particular. And I just kind of want us, I want us to especially focus more on Megalon and Revenge, because those are really the two movies that tend to really be discussed more than any other. Personally, Ness, you and I, we have a very sentimental attachment to Godzilla vs. Megalon. In fact, it was the second Godzilla movie that we ever saw. I mean, granted, I haven't watched the movie all that much within the last few years. In fact, I've probably seen the movie only twice. Yeah, definitely twice within the last 10 to 15 years. And of course, one of those being recently the
DVD release.
DVD release by, was it Tokyo Shock?
Yeah, Media Blasters, pretty much.
That's what I thought. And after that, I mean, I've always found in like with this episode with Godzilla X Mechagodzilla, with that movie, how I was saying throughout many 8 or 9 years that it's been available here in the States, that I always looked at it to be perhaps one of the weakest entries, not just in the Millennium era, but also the entire franchise. In fact, after this most recent viewing a few days ago when I watched it, I honestly thought it was a stronger entry than I remember. I have come to appreciate the movie more. And so my point is that I have done that with Megalon as well, especially after the new recent DVD release, in which the film isn't as grainy. It's presented in widescreen format. We are getting the scenes that were removed from the kind of, I guess you could say, the official release, U.S. release of the movie from back in the late 70s. You know, Megalon has its problems, as I'm sure I'll have to go back and listen to that episode, as I'm sure we discussed in that particular episode, would have been episode 13.
I
will admit, Megalon has its flaws. It's not perfect. There is an awful lot of stock footage in it. You know, it is definitely a movie that is geared more to a younger audience. But I must say that I can kind of understand where the movie drags on for a lot of people, that the car chase scene, I can kind of see where it drags on. But for me, personally, the final battle makes up for any shortcomings this movie has. But also at the same time, the last time I saw this movie back in August on the new DVD release, I thought the movie seemed like it ran, you know, 50, 60 minutes instead of an hour and 23 minutes, which I think is the official running time of the movie. And I understand Godzilla's absent for much of the film as well, with the exception of the final, 15, 20 minutes, however long the final battle is. It's not perfect. I personally don't watch it all that often, but for me, I know I'm somewhat biased in this, just because it's the second Godzilla movie I ever saw. But trying to be as objective as I possibly can, I can see where people would find the movie boring. I can see how they would consider it maybe one of the worst movies perhaps within the franchise. You know, we watch these movies for Monster Romp, and we get a good one with Megalon in it. And I just think the final battle, though, is just way too good. I would even say that the final battle in this movie is better than what we get in many other Godzilla movies, including Godzilla's Revenge, which there's one person in particular, I'm not going to mention names, who believes Godzilla's Revenge is one of the better movies in the Godzilla franchise and is very underrated. And to a certain degree, I can agree and say, yeah, it's underrated. One of the best? No, I don't agree with that. But you know, there is some charm with Godzilla's Revenge, but I would say it's more of a unique film. It's a little bit different, just because it was a movie that is geared more towards kind of teaching children a lesson that, you know, monsters aren't real, that you need to, and this is quite the message, stand up for yourself, and if people are picking on you, then you fight them.
Yeah.
Well, I find that kind of funny that they, in a way, advocate violence, but oh well, I didn't make the movie, so my hands are clean of that. But going back to Megalon, though, like I said, I can see where people would consider it one of the most boring and one of the worst. But I still, because of the final battle, I still have a harder time wrapping around it being considered the worst. I don't know. I mean, the music, yeah, it's very goofy. Richiro Manabe, his score in both this film and Smog Monster are very distinct with the trumpet Godzilla theme being very distinct within the franchise, especially for those of us who have been exposed to these two films. I guess I'm having difficulty here trying to articulate what I'm trying to say is, but I guess really to kind of give you an opportunity to jump in here, I personally do not, I have a hard time completely wrapping my mind around and saying that Megalon is the quote unquote worst of the franchise. And I'm trying to think of other movies that I think I would maybe consider worse. I would consider Godzilla's Revenge the quote-unquote worst, just because it has, I think, it does have a lot of stock footage in it. Does it have more than Megalon? I'm not sure. That's something we would maybe have to sit down in time. I don't know if we would consider that by number of scenes that are stock footage or in terms of time, how much time is devoted to stock footage or what. But that film, I find Godzilla's Revenge, even though I was on a high on that movie here about 10 years ago, and it's not a bad film. I just think that it's a film where its audience is definitely more geared more towards children. I just don't find it to be quite as entertaining, especially the new stuff, obviously, because all the old battles are shown in there from Son of Godzilla and Godzilla vs. the Sea Monster. So you get a case of been there, done that with those battles. But because Megalon is, in terms of its big battles, the final battle that is being newer, you just get you get fresher material, I think, with that final battle. And yeah, there are a few cut frames that involve Godzilla versus Gigan, but for the most part, it's newer footage. And I just have a hard time wrapping my mind around it being the quote-unquote worst. And like I said, for me, I would maybe consider Godzilla's Revenge quote-unquote worst, just because with me being a person who is nearing 30, the target audience for that movie is not towards me anymore like it was a number of years ago when we first saw the movie. And I'm not saying it's a bad movie in that sense, but for a person my age, I can see where I can say Godzilla's Revenge doesn't appeal to me like it used to. And I'm not saying it's bad. I don't think any of these are bad. I just think in terms of maybe entertainment value, perhaps. I mean, like I said, I rate all Godzilla movies number one in my book just because I love this giant monster and I love these films. They're all entertaining. In fact, I prefer Godzilla's Revenge over many other movies that are out there, even in the United States. I don't think Megalon is that bad. What are your thoughts?
It's like out of all these three that you've written down on the itinerary here, I think I might have bashed a little bit more on Godzilla's Revenge. in the earlier episodes of PXCR compared to Megalon. But ever since then, I've been kind of thinking more and more about the overall product of Godzilla's Revenge. And this was before I saw Gamera versus Gamera the Super Monster, which isn't, you know, particularly related to the franchise. But after seeing Gamera the Super Monster, which to me has to be one of the worst kaiju movies I've seen by far.
Oh, I'm going to quickly interrupt you here on that. Yeah. A lot of people think Gyangari is one, if not the worst, Daikaiju films of all time. Uh-uh. No. 67 Gyangari is like...
It's an
Oscar winner compared to Super Monster Gamera.
The 67 Gyangari is probably a few light years better than Gamera the Super Monster.
Super Monster, I have a very, very hard time watching that. I couldn't even get through it all the first viewing. Ask Ness about that.
Yeah, because we both watched it together. I practically forced Nick into watching it. Well, I think he wanted to see how bad it was just because of my complaints about it and my reactions towards that movie, especially when I reviewed it on one of the earlier episodes of PXCR. But yeah, after seeing that movie, I think it just kind of gave me more of a second thought on Godzilla's Revenge, and I think it makes me appreciate that film better.
Just think, though, we're going to have to watch Super Monster at least one more time to review it for this podcast.
Yeah,
Think of how much fun we're both going to have. I just think that's going to be a hilarious episode. We should do a commentary of that episode. Seriously, like we put it in our DVD players at the same time and do like a MST3K of it.
Or since we're going to be having a IGN style video pages on the website, and once we release that, we can actually take some clips of that movie and then dub it over with our voices. Kind of do it that way as the MST3K style.
That would be hilarious.
But, yeah, I mean, I've already written a review on it on the websites earlier when the website was still up, and it's still on there. I mean, once the website's still up, you can go take a look at it. I mean, pretty much what I've kind of somewhat said is practically in that review, but a little bit more worse than what I said here. But, I mean, with that, seeing that movie, it makes me appreciate Revenge a lot more than I have in the past, and especially from my review earlier in PXCR. But, I mean, as far as the worst Godzilla movie.
I mean, what are your thoughts like on Megalon? I'm not asking you to essentially say, unless you want to, but like, I'm just kind of saying that, like, Megalon specifically right now, and just even these three movies, I think in some cases, some people are going a little overboard with some of these.
Yeah.
Like, it's always Megalon and Godzilla's Revenge. Those are really the two that pop up the most in this type of discussion.
Well, with Megalon being the second film that we've seen, I mean, it kind of has a special place in my heart as being one of the first Godzilla movies that I've seen. And one of the things I, you know, particularly grew up with, and to me, I really don't see much hatred towards the movie since I've grown up with it. I mean, I like, you know, to this day still, even though I haven't seen the movie in years or so, I still appreciate that film more. I don't think it's the worst movie? Is it the best? No. There's much better Godzilla movies than Megalon. I just don't see it as being the worst movie in the entire franchise. And I just don't really see where a lot of the fans kind of get the boringness from. It just seems like there's really no boring parts in the film itself. So, and it's like I haven't even seen the DVD version yet, because I've still been waiting for the Blu-ray version, which still hasn't even come out yet. And I think the process of the extra content for that release is still being slowly processed by Toho at this point, but I digress. Probably one of the worst that I particularly think in the Godzilla franchise, which isn't written on this itinerary or hasn't really been mentioned much by fans, to me, I think would be Godzilla versus the Smog Monster. In a way, because I mean, there's just so much weirdness into that movie, and to me, there's just a lot of standstill and not a whole lot, not much kind of going on the way, and there isn't that much music kind of going on during the bouts.
There are other people who have mentioned that, and these are even people who love that movie because they grew up with it on TV.
Mm-hmm. But to me, from watching that film many times, and I think the first time that we watched that was like in the mid to later 90s. I think when we rented it from a video renting store that was in West Des Moines. That was right next to Borders there. Since watching that film, it just seems it just gets weirder and crazier every time. And I just don't know how this movie kind of flies under the radar of not being one of the worst, if not the worst, Godzilla film in the franchise.
Yeah, it's always interesting. A lot of people I've heard, though, however, have said that a lot of them who are Godzilla fans now, who are probably what in their
30s or 40s?
No, they would have to be in their 40s, like mid-late 40s, early 50s now. They would, you know, talk about watching it on local TV channels growing up. And I can understand that, because when you're a kid, your taste in movies is different. I can almost guarantee you that if my first two Godzilla movies weren't Godzilla vs. the Sea Monster and Godzilla vs. Megalon... I can almost guarantee you that if I were to see those movies later, I probably wouldn't care for them as much. Mm-hmm. I probably wouldn't. And those just happened to be introduced to me at the time that they were in my life.
Yeah.
I mean, Smog Monster is weird. It definitely is. I remember when we first watched it, it was hard for me to watch this because I had no idea what the heck was going on.
Yeah, same here.
It was so weird. And even now, I still think it's weird, but I understand it a little bit more. And yes, it's a product of its time, which I can appreciate. But at the same time, just because I can appreciate it being a product of its time doesn't necessarily mean I think that makes it good. But
yeah.
It does have certain elements to it that I think a fan can appreciate. Like, I do think the Smog Monster or Hedorah is... definitely a cool opponent, even though it's just a pile of sludge. But I think his some of his abilities are really neat. And I do think, as well, just some of the carnage you see in that movie is definitely shocking. at least, especially when you consider the time that it was made. But let's talk about Final Wars. I mean, why do you think Final Wars right now is... I mean, we kind of know the answer to this, but kind of discuss like why you think Final Wars is so controversial right now, and kind of what do you think of the fans who do look at this movie and make it to be one of the worst, if not the worst, out of the entire franchise? I mean, do you think maybe they're taking it a little too far, or do you think that part of it is because it's the most recent Godzilla movie, or the or because it's the 50th anniversary? I mean, kind of what are your... try to psychologize people as far as what they're thinking with this.
I know I haven't seen the movie much lately, but from what I can remember, it could possibly be is that I think it's kind of somewhat rehashes from Destroy All Monsters in a sort of sense, but kind of taken out the aliens from Destroy All Monsters, take them out, and then inserting the Planet X alien race into this film, and thus kind of somewhat having Destroy All Monsters 2 sort of kind of a remake, sequel, or perhaps kind of a reboot of the movie, which I can maybe see where people are kind of getting at with this. It's kind of somewhat of a rehash type of story, and like something that's like they already knew what's going to happen and all that, especially with the villain pretty much being a King Ghidorah like monster. But to me, I think at the same time, I think a lot of fans are going a little bit too far on this. I mean, I still enjoy, you know, watching Godzilla Final Wars, even though I haven't seen it for quite some time, until a couple episodes from now, which we will have to, you know, of course, review the film itself. But I'll probably will know more later on when I see the film itself. So I think at this point in time, before I see the movie, I think the fans are kind of overreacting a little bit too much on it, since it's been out for at least 8 years right now. That's my guess for the time being, until I see the movie itself, since I haven't seen it for a while, and plus we're going to be reviewing it in a couple episodes from now. So that's my only guess as to why the fans are kind of talking about GFW as being one of the worst. But to me, I don't think it's one of the worst films. I think it's one of the better films in the Millennium series collections. Is it the best? No, I think Godzilla 2000 is the best in that Millennium series.
Yeah, I think with Final Wars, I mean, I agree with a lot of the complaints most fans have about this film, which kind of to a certain degree are the Exilians, although I would say I don't mind the depiction of the Exilians in this movie, although I think the villain, the head Exilian, I think he is a little bit more goofy than he should be. But for the most part, I do agree with that. And also the fact that, yeah, it does take a while for the kaiju action to really get going, especially the Godzilla parts, with the exception of the beginning where we had that flashback. The human drama is, it's not extremely interesting, but at the same time, I don't think it's awful either. But the thing that makes me more bored with that movie more than anything else is that motorcycle fight scene. I thought that went on way too long.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you on that particular part, is that particular scene, to me, kind of felt a bit boring, too, and kind of took on a little bit longer.
And the monster fights, too, because the movie was so late in getting the monster action going, the monster fights were way too short. And and I think, too, to a certain degree, that was done on purpose, to a certain degree, to show how powerful Godzilla was. And I think, too, some people, even though a lot of people enjoyed seeing a lot of the kaiju in this movie, the majority of the kaiju cast in this film was so obscure. And it's just because Ryu Katamura was a fan, or is a fan, of the 70s films. Hence the throwback to many of the kaiju that show up in this film. And two, yeah, the film does borrow an awful lot from other movies. Star Wars, Matrix, whatever. I mean, you can, Indiana Jones, I don't know. But you can, you know, insert almost any kind of movie here and it borrows from it. And even with me, one of my things is basically the kaiju action on how short it is for the most part. Even though the final hour for the most part is all about the monsters. But my issue is with the final battle between Godzilla and Monster X. It cuts between the Exilian human or mutant fight, I should say, and the Godzilla Monster X fight. The Godzilla versus Monster X fight seems a lot shorter than what it really is, but they focus too much on the Exilian mutant fight more than I think they should. But yeah, I can kind of understand where people are coming from. I mean, I do agree when people say, look, you can skip the first half of the movie and skip straight to the monster action. You're not going to really miss a darn thing except for small little monster scenes here and there. But those scenes don't add up to much. I can kind of see that. I do think, though, despite the fact that, yeah, this GFW does borrow an awful lot from other films. I still think some fans go a little too far in their bashing of this movie, I think they're a little too harsh or too critical of it. But at the same time, I think part of that, one, is due to the fact that it's the most recent or the newest quote-unquote Godzilla film right now. But I think more importantly, outside the fact that it's the newest one, is the fact that it's the 50th anniversary film, the golden anniversary film. And I think some people felt, in terms of the trying to, in a ways, mark this historical significance in this movie character, I think they thought it was inadequate. And I think to many fans, if this were like, if, let's just say for sake of argument, Godzilla 2000 and Godzilla Final Wars were switched in their order, I'm sure you probably would have more people who would be critical of Godzilla 2000 just because that was the 50th anniversary film. I think when you get something that is as big as a 50th anniversary film, I think people are going to look at it more with a critical eye than they would if it was not such a historic landmark event.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the same way, too, when you were kind of mentioning about Godzilla vs. Space Godzilla, as that was his 40th anniversary film.
Yeah. I don't think a whole lot of people were looking at that, though, because when you talk about that movie, really no one talks anything about the significance of it being the 40th anniversary film. Same thing even with Godzilla vs. Mechagodzilla 74, 20th anniversary. Even though Toho had it in mind when Toho was like, oh, it's 20 years, let's create this villain, but that's not what the fans themselves were thinking. It's kind of with GFW more than anything else. Just because it's the 50th, I think that's where fans are actually taking the anniversary marker and taking that into consideration when they view this film and its significance to the history of the franchise.
And could they also, I'm thinking too, that with this anniversary type thing that they're, some of these fans are implying on, could they also possibly imply that to the legendary's Godzilla when that comes out in 2014, and also that marks Godzilla's 60th anniversary? Because I'm probably guessing that they'll too probably will look at this kind of somewhat the same way that they're also looking at the 50th anniversary film.
I think they're only going to do that, though, simply because for several reasons. Number one, and this is in no particular order of importance, but number one, it's the first Godzilla film in 10 years. So it's the newest Godzilla film, essentially. Number two, it's the second American Godzilla film. And I think a lot of people, because there are a lot of fans out there who don't like the 98 film, I think a lot of people are cautiously optimistic about the 2014 film. They're a little bit apprehensive of getting as excited about this film as they did with the 98 film before it was released. And number three, there I think is a lot riding on that film, because depending upon how well the movie does box office-wise, that will determine whether there are any sequels and or if Toho themselves revives Godzilla. I think it'll be very interesting to see what will happen if the movie does do well, which I'm hoping it does.
Well, it's kind of like the same way with the 98 version. Although it did well in the box office and profited a lot more than expected, it still kind of fell short in terms of producing any sequels or any of that. Although it did produce the cartoon series for quite some time there, but however, that kind of also led to Toho just deciding to revive Godzilla, hence the Millennium series after that.
Well, yeah, and it's not so much because of the financial success of the 98 film, it's just because of fan outcry from the 98 film. I think it'll be interesting, though, that if the 2014 film does do well, if they will make a sequel, or if Toho is going to say, we're going to go back and do it again ourselves. It'll be interesting to see what will happen if that ends up being the case. Mm-hmm. I think, though, what will happen, just because Hollywood tends to put bigger budgets towards its movies than places like Japan does, I think they would be more willing to stick with the United States as long as these movies keep making money. The thing is, though, I don't see this ever being a franchise in the United States. Mm-hmm. It's so hard to do that anymore. We live in a different time, and the movies are so different than they were even two decades ago. I think if this movie does do well, at most, it's going to be a trilogy. But that's my thought on it.
Okay. Well, it's like I know with James Bond, though, they have done quite a bit of movies of that.
Yeah, they need to quit James Bond. I'm sorry for those of you who are James Bond fans.
And then as well as the Star Wars films as well, including the most recently, the Lord of the Rings films as well, since The Hobbit just been released here this past Friday. So, I mean, like, I know you kind of saying it would be kind of somewhat, you know, be kind of hard to, you know, make a franchise, like a filming franchise and all that. I do think it's possible. However, I think in order to have something like that, it's that you would need a huge following, like good examples, like huge following with Star Wars, or like a huge following with the fantasy realm as Lord of the Rings is. And then you've got, you know, the Godzilla films. Although we don't have much of a large type of audience, I think that's kind of something that we specifically need in order if we want a new Godzilla franchise launched here in the U.S.
Yeah. I think there is a big following, though, with Godzilla. It's just that I think it doesn't it doesn't grow.
It's particularly
like,
fast,
like a Star Wars.
Yeah.
Partially because Star Wars is more prominent, I guess you could say, than Godzilla, and it's a wider universe too. So there are more possibilities for stories as well. But, yeah, I think it's just because Godzilla has this stigma attached to it. And, yeah, here's, once again, where Megalon comes in with negativity with some fans. It all goes back to Megalon being shown in the United States, but I blame John Belushi and the American distributors who severely edited that film more than I do blame people like Jun Fukuda and people involved with the Megalon project.
Mm-hmm.
But... we should probably move on. We're already, in terms of recording time, over 3 hours. I'm getting hungry. I kind of want to wrap this thing up a little bit sooner. Why don't we tune it up?
That's totally fine with me and stuff. So, I mean, we can
delete it from my notes.
I mean, I'll save my tune it up song for next time. Stuff for the first episode for next year.
But I do want to have this discussion about the Heisei. So, you know, kind of like what we did with the Showa, there are essentially three questions. What do you think is the state of the Heisei era now? What do you think the state of the Heisei era will be 10 years from now? And what are your opinions of the Heisei era? So kind of answer those questions in the order that I asked. I mean, you got the notes right there, so.
Yeah, I'm just trying to kind of somewhat put this together in my mind. And I know this is particularly the first era where every single movie is kind of pretty much linked to one another. Unlike, of course, the Showa era, which is just pretty much sparse throughout the entire era, and then Millennium series, where you pretty much get just about every single movie that's at least a sequel to the original 1954 Godzilla. So we kind of somewhat have a pattern with each of these three eras in the franchise. But with the Heisei era, it's pretty much linking every single movie within that era with one another. But with me, I think the state of the Heisei era as of right now, I think it still kind of somewhat has somewhat of a better perception, per se, out of the entire franchise. But to me, I think that will kind of somewhat weather out over time, including within the next 10 years. I think it'll start somewhat geared towards being probably one of the most unpopular, if not the most unpopular, era of the entire franchise. Just the way a lot of the stories within those films have been told, the executions of those films, and pretty much the human dramas within those films as well, more particularly with Godzilla versus King Ghidorah, which I think with both of us is pretty much the worst film within that
era. Something we didn't even bring up in this last segment.
Yeah.
Godzilla versus King Ghidorah.
But, oh well. Anyways, I think a lot of people are going to kind of remember the Heisei era with Godzilla vs. King Ghidorah, like some of the other fans will link the Showa era with Godzilla vs. Megalon, or maybe a couple of the other films such as Godzilla's Revenge or Godzilla vs. Smog Monster, kind of like me. So yeah, I kind of see its value or popularity kind of weathering out over the next 10 years as being a little bit more unpopular, and then seeing Millennium series replacing it as being one of the better series within the franchise. And with my own opinion, I kind of also think the same way as well as time goes on, although my all-time favorite Godzilla movie is within that era, which is The Return of Godzilla, or Godzilla 1985, which is pretty
technically
much...
that film is considered in the Showa era.
Well, that's where I still consider it as part of the Heisei era, since it's practically a few years off from Godzilla vs. Biollante, so I still consider that part of the Heisei, because there's a big huge gap. Stop it, Nick. Because there's a big huge gap between the Showa, between the last Showa film, which is Terror of Mechagodzilla, and Godzilla 1985. So to me, that huge gap between those two films is the end of one era and the beginning of a new era. So, yeah, to me, I think the popularity of the Heisei era will start to weather out over the next 10 years.
So are those your personal feelings on the franchise too, or?
That's what I just said. If you were listening.
Just making sure.
If you were listening!
I couldn't even hear a darn thing you just said.
Because you're a douche.
But anyway, I tend to kind of disagree with you a little bit more, or a little bit on this, more than with the Showa era discussion. I think the state of the Heisei era right now is at its lowest, and has been for quite a while. I think a lot of people are looking at this, and they definitely are looking at these movies as not being quite as, I guess you could say, crap, I just forgot the word.
Good?
No, not good, but I mean, that ultimately involves good, but in terms of like creativity, the creativity doesn't seem to be as there in the eyes of many fans, and I can see that. And a lot of people say this is the Beam Wars era, and that's true. There's a lot of beam blasting going on. And you know, and I think too, I think part of that has, part of the non-availability of these movies on DVD is somewhat hurting it, because, I mean, well, with Godzilla vs. Biollante, it was just released on DVD here recently, like, what, almost 2 weeks ago now?
Yeah, December 4th.
Actually, no, it was 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, December 4th.
And the thing is, though, I haven't seen it at my Best Buy, but that doesn't mean that it's not available at like a Best Buy in like a Chicago area, for example,
or Buy online.
But nevertheless, it's still a recent release. But yet, there's not a whole lot of marketing geared towards Godzilla movies in general. And even though Godzilla vs. Biollante was just recently released on the Blu-ray and the DVD, it's not going to be as widely marketed as like The Dark Knight Rises, for example. Definitely a much more popular film. Whereas Godzilla vs. Biollante is more like a underground film, so to speak, or a cult classic, so to speak. There's a more of a small niche, I guess you could say, involved with that film than there is with a film like Dark Knight Rises. I think, too, because you had some of the Heisei-era films released an odd number of years ago, like, what, 14-ish years ago now, a lot of those aren't really being produced anymore. And I think because of that, you're not seeing the availability, and I think that does hurt these movies to a certain degree. But once again, it all goes back again to, unfortunately, Godzilla just not being as popular here in the United States when compared to something like a Star Wars, for example, or Batman. So, you know, there are a number of reasons for that, but I do believe in terms of the fandom itself, the Heisei era is at an all-time low. And I think it will be for a little while longer. And so I think 10 years from now, I think what you're going to see is people looking at the Heisei era and actually liking it more. I think with time, a lot of people end up, not always, but I think most people will have certain movies grow on them with time. I noticed that with Godzilla X Mechagodzilla this week, for example, I enjoyed watching this movie more this past week than I did at any other, even when it was a brand new movie for me. I had never seen before on the first viewing.
That was pretty terrible. I gotta stop you there. It was on my end. You really kind of gobbled up. Your audio was kind of getting disrupted there.
Yeah, your picture was getting all weird on my end, but...
because I am weird.
Yeah, your face. I think, you know, time tends to, as they say, take care of a lot of things with people. I think, and that's going to be true, I think, with the Heisei era. I think a lot of us fans who look at the Heisei era and look at it to be the weakest era within the Godzilla franchise, I think we'll appreciate it more as time goes on. Yeah, I think there are unanimous sentiments when people are going to say, yeah, the Heisei era is better than I had given credit, than I had given it credit before, but it's still not as creative as the Showa era. And I think that's appropriate. I think it's appropriate in saying that it's not as creative as the Showa era. But I would even to a certain degree say that about the Millennium era. Even the Millennium, I would say, is a little bit more creative than the Heisei era. But I think with time, I think not only with time, but especially if Toho ever expands and does an odd number of other Godzilla movies, or if this American film becomes a trilogy or something like that, I think, regardless, people are going to find themselves being gradually more attached to this era as time goes by. I think they're going to give this film a little bit more credit than what they have. I know for a long time you and I thought the Heisei era was the better one, just because they were films that had better effects. But as, and I can't speak for you on this, but for me anyways, I do like the Showa era more just because of the older effects, the more practical effects, even though they may not be as good, so to speak, or as believable in terms of their execution, there's just a certain charm about them that is brought about. And my personal opinions on the Heisei era, I have watched a few more Heisei era films within the last few months than I have over the last few years. And I'm warming up to it again. Like, I just got done watching Godzilla vs. Mechagodzilla 2 here last week. And I really had forgotten as far as how good that movie is. And, of course, that's one of my favorite films out of the Heisei era, is Godzilla vs. Mechagodzilla 2. And what was it, back in May, I believe it was, I had watched Godzilla vs. King Ghidorah. Even though if you go to my blog, of course, you'll see I bash that movie up and down. Even though it's true, I do believe it to be the worst Heisei-era movie that has an awful lot of issues with it. I still found it to be pretty entertaining. Still, I thought a lot of there was more Godzilla action in it than I had remembered, and I thought the two big battles in the movie were very entertaining. And I think I'm finding out with me, like, I've just found out in general with my resurgence and becoming kind of like a, I guess you could say, a born-again Godzilla fan, so to speak. I am enjoying every single movie that I watch, even though, yes, as I stated earlier, I still like certain movies more than others. Like, for example, Mothra vs. Godzilla and Godzilla vs. Monster Zero are two of my all-time favorite Godzilla movies. I'm going to watch those movies more than I will, like, let's say, Terror of Mechagodzilla, for example. I think that with me, it's definitely an era that, because of the continuity, it helps it. I know a lot of people were kind of upset with the Millennium era because there really wasn't much in the way of continuity, and that's understandable. And the Showa era got rid of continuity, starting with the seventh movie, Godzilla versus the Sea Monster. And I think having continuity helps it. However, issues do come up. I think part of the problem is that you had multiple directors, which resulted in different viewpoints as far as the direction in which the Heisei era should go. And that's part of it, I think. But also just some of the weirdest storylines, like Godzilla vs. King Ghidorah. And I know some people look at that as one of the better films of the Heisei era, and I wish I could agree with them. I wish I could try to figure out what they see in that movie, but I just unfortunately can't. I look at it as not that good. Oh, crap. I feel like I'm going to sneeze here.
Yeah, go on, sneeze. Oh, no. Oh, no. Sick.
Oh, there's mucus all over the microphone. No.
Oh, it's covered. Oh.
Let me wipe it off. Okay, there we go.
That's that one saying. Oh, dang.
Oh, dang. But I think the Heisei era is really a fun era. And I don't like every single movie in the Heisei era, just like I don't like every single movie in the Millennium or even the Showa era. The Showa era, for example, I don't care much for many of the 70s films, for example. That's not to say I don't hate any of the movies. I just prefer some over others. But I I like it. And my love for the Heisei era is growing more with more movies that I see. And you know, I watched Godzilla vs. Biollante back, what, in April? That's the first time in, my gosh, 15 years, I think, that I've seen the movie. I just am finding that myself liking it more, and I watched Godzilla 1985 around April as well. I mean, I am watching more and more of these films, and I'm finding that I enjoy these films a whole lot more. And part of it is just because I haven't seen them in a while, too. So that's part of it. But yeah, those are my thoughts on it.
Okay. All right, let's get down to practically the last segment of the show. And from looking at the time here and how much we have done so far, we've actually have done 2 hours and 45 minutes, a hell of a lot longer than we thought it was going to be.
So, that's okay. We're giving them something that will keep them busy all the way through the next episode, so it'll take them like 16 days to get through this episode.
Yeah, and I think this is going to be by far the longest episode in the entire in the show's history.
Let's do this. Let's do this thing.
Oh, we're going to easily rip a new hole in this. So
let's do this.
Yeah, I know. I know what you said. So shut up.
let's do this.
Okay, so the next segment, or the last segment, I should say, is Name That Movie, or otherwise known as the Quote Game. It's pretty much where we give out the quotes of a particular movie to the other person on the other side here, and then they would have to answer what the name of the movie that quote came from, and then they'll also have at least one lifeline for each of the quotes that are mentioned here, and we've scaled back down to 5 this time around since it's a little bit more manageable and easier to find more quotes and all that gobbledygook. So, I think since Nick has kind of gone first throughout the entire segments of this episode, I think I should probably go first in this one. So, unlike last time, since mine were kind of pretty much easy, I kind
of... Yeah, I'm disappointed, considering I look at you and I as being two huge Godzilla fans and knowing our movies frontwards and backwards, I was surprised at how lame your quotes are.
So, this time around, I made it harder. I hope I did for Nick.
Bring it on.
This time around. So, let's get down to the first quote here. So, quote number one. It smells musty down here.
It smells musty down here. It smells musty down here. A couple movies come to mind immediately when you say that. It smells musty down here. That is a tough one. Lifeline.
It is one of the... I should probably say it is outside of the Godzilla realm.
That's what I thought. Matango.
No.
Ooh.
Rodan.
Okay, that was the next one I was going to come up with. It was the next one. Touché. I missed my first ever quote ever in this history, unlike some people who have missed a lot more than I have.
shut up. Okay. On to the second quote here. Brother against brother, huh? Sounds like some countries I know.
Oh, brother against brother. Oh, I do know this. I know. As the Cowardly Lion would say. Brother against brother. Sounds like some countries I know. Oh, I know. I think I've seen this movie recently. Oh, yeah, War of the Gargantuas.
Yeah.
I did see this recently. Yeah, so.
Okay. On to the third quote. Don't tell your mom about us, okay?
Don't tell your mom about us?
This is an actual quote.
Lifeline.
It is within the Gamera realm.
Oh no. Is it Super Monster Gamera?
Yeah.
No?
Yes, it is.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
Okay, well, I'm 2 for 3.
Okay, number 4. But now, I hate you and Mr. Tonoka.
One movie came to mind, but I don't think it's the right one. Lifeline.
Let's see, how should I put this? It's a movie that's not a Godzilla or Gamera film.
Oh, interesting. Okay, well then that takes care of the one movie I was thinking of. Say the quote again.
But now, I hate you and Mr. Tonoka.
Is it Dogura?
Nope. It is Gappa.
What?
Gappa.
Oh, Gappa. Well, I saw that movie. When was the last time I saw that movie? It was this year. It was maybe March or April, I think I want to say. I last saw that movie. Crap. So I'm what? 50%.
Yep, so far.
I have to get this last one to stay above 500.
And I'm not sure if you're going to get this one.
Shut up, I will.
Okay. Last quote. There's a princess?
Ghidorah, the three-headed monster.
Nope.
Crap.
It's from episode 7 of Ultraman.
Oh, are we doing Ultraman?
Yep.
See, no one told me that. I thought we were just doing movies because it says name that movie. That's not a movie.
Still doesn't matter.
Hey, you cheated. Folks, you are witness. We've played this game now for 3 episodes. It's called Name That Movie, not Name That Movie plus the TV episode.
But it's also called a quote game.
You made that up. I never called it the quote game, and I invented this darn game.
You still call it the quote game?
That's a cheat. I got robbed.
Sure, whatever.
I got robbed. Fine, if we're going to do that, name this quote up yours. No. Fine, I hope you get all of these wrong then. And in fact, the one quote I was going to give you, 2 lifelines, I'm decreasing that to 1. Well, someone's calling me on my cell phone. I'm not picking that up. They can wait. We'll wait. Okay, so I hope you get these all wrong. I'm going to put a curse on you. Get them all wrong. Okay, so here's the first quote. You paying attention now?
A little bit.
Okay, well, here it comes. Does anyone know where it came from?
Sorry, I got to wipe my eyes out.
It looked like you were crying. Were you crying?
A little bit, just from the hilarity.
I did get robbed.
Okay. Can you say the quote again?
Does anyone know where it came from?
It does sound familiar. Lifeline.
It's from the Gamera franchise.
Does anybody know where it came from?
Do you have that fan on again?
No.
Oh, it just got really loud with fuzz there.
That kind of fuzz?
Yeah.
Well, I know I kind of accidentally hit my garbage can underneath. Excuse me. Underneath me. So that could have been it. Anyways. Does anybody know where that came from? I might have to say it's somewhere within the newer Gamera films. I would have to say Gamera Guardian of the Universe.
No, it's Gamera 3.
Ah, dang. I was close,
though. So you're 0 for 1. Ha.
I was close, though.
You were, but nevertheless, you still got it wrong.
So, shut
okay.
up.
Okay. Quote number 2. You want me to clone it?
This sounds familiar.
I think this one might be the easiest one I have out of all 5. If you don't get it, you should slap yourself on the forehead.
I at least want to have a lifeline on this one.
Well, I deny you that lifeline. No. No, you can't have it. It's a Millennium Era Godzilla film.
I thought so. Godzilla 2000.
Nope. It's Godzilla X Mechagodzilla.
What?
The movie we just saw. Yep.
Damn it.
Slap yourself on the forehead.
No.
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 Fine, we'll move on. This was the one I was going to give you 2 lifelines on, but since you were being a douche, I'm only giving you 1. So I'm going to say right now, this quote may not be entirely accurate, but the general idea of it is the same. If we attach that thing over there, then it might make that thing work over there. And then it goes on and on, but it's a bunch of gibberish is what it was.
Oh, man. I think I just heard this before, too.
Oh. Well, I don't know if you have this movie on DVD, so... Unless you saw it maybe on Crackle. Well, it might be on Crackle, but I don't think you've seen it on there.
Lifeline.
It's a Godzilla movie in the Heisei era.
That sounds familiar. Does sound familiar. Probably have to say it's somewhere in the early part of the Heisei era. No typing during podcast show, by the way.
What?
You hear me?
No, I couldn't.
Yeah, you did.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, you did.
Whatever.
I said no typing during the show.
There's one other person who is typing to me.
Still, no typing no matter what.
You're a giant fool.
Hey, that's according to our rules here. I would have to say Godzilla versus Biollante.
Nope. Nope. It is Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla.
I was thinking about that too.
So you are 0 for 3. Good. Good. I'm glad you're losing. Okay, so here's the fourth one. If you don't get this, then I win this round. The best you can do now is tie me. And then we're both called douchebags. Okay. I hope that I, a 20th century man, should ever hope to die as well. Oh, I mean, excuse me. Let me redo that. I wonder if I, a 20th century man, should ever hope to die as well. That quote.
Lifeline.
It's not a Godzilla or a Gamera movie.
Repeat the quote again.
I wonder if I, a 20th century man, should ever hope to die as well. It's a really weird quote, but I think if you don't get it, you're gonna go, oh yeah, which I hope you don't.
Thinking somewhere along the lines, either between the Tango or H-Man. I probably would say the H-Man.
Wrong. So I win, but on top of that, it's from Rodan.
Oh.
Yeah, see, now it comes to you. Yeah, you remember what part of the movie it was in?
I'm probably guessing it was early in the film.
Nope, it was towards the end. You even got that wrong. Yeah. It was in his exposition.
Okay.
Right at the end as the poor Rodans are burning up. I don't know why I find that funny.
And you know, I was kind of also thinking along that lines too, but I was like, I don't know, because Nick would probably say something else that's not particularly a kaiju film, so...
Okay. Well, here's the last one. You might get this, but it's a very, very short one. Welcome, Godzilla.
Oh! It's Godzilla 1985.
It is.
Yeah.
So you weren't a complete and total loser. You were just a big loser.
Besides, like, someday we're probably going to be fleshed out movie quotes, so might as well get into the show as well.
Oh, we won't run out of movie quotes, trust me. We have way too many movies to quote from.
So what?
I guarantee you, like, I could probably quote one Godzilla movie for probably, like, an entire 2 years at least for this game. You can never run out of quotes. I could probably quote... Wouldn't that be interesting to quote a single movie and quote every single quote from the very beginning all the way to the very end? So you get an entire story over, like, 80 episodes or something.
Yeah.
That'd be very funny.
That'd be pretty ridiculous.
I would love to try it, but I'm afraid to, because then it makes it that much easier, because then the other person's going to get it.
It pretty much would dilute the entire game.
I don't think it would dilute the game from that movie, but it would make it easier for the other person, because once the other person, unless they're completely stupid, which I don't think either one of us is, they would be like, oh, well, the last 12 were from Godzilla vs. Megalon. This one is from Godzilla vs. Megalon. So my answer is Godzilla vs. Megalon.
Yeah, it's just pretty much kind of like one of those, kind of like a radio show that had it. Kind of like the same thing, but it was like the name of the segment was like, the answer is C.
So. You want to do multiple choice?
No, I was just giving an example. Yeah.
I don't want multiple choice because I want us to be hardcore. Hardcore!
Yeah, I don't know where you wanted to go with, with that gesture that you just made there.
Yeah, I was imitating Joe Swanson from Family Guy. But, anyway...
that pretty much
that concludes this very long, very, very long episode.
And we actually made it 2-3 hours.
Yeah.
Can you believe it? The first ever in show history.
Now we have to try to do a 4-hour episode.
Oh, God. And then probably, like, the next time we'll say, oh, let's do a marathon, like 12 hours or 24 hours.
That'll Seriously, dude, we should try that. Like, have porta potties. And or bedpans, I should say, and we sit on those, and we have a supply of like Mountain Dew, and
that'll be for
and,
you. No typing.
Sec here, just a second here. No this typing. Person, they're gonna be going away here. Just a second.
But if that were to ever happen,
like we get.
You just like interrupted me here.
I couldn't hear you.
Because you're an idiot.
like get a bunch of Doritos and Cheetos and a lot of Mountain Dew and Red Bull. And we just do a 12. And each episode we get an hour longer.
But like I was saying before, I got interrupted there that... if that were to ever happen, it'd probably be like the first episode of a new season when both you and I are at G-Fest. That's probably something where we probably would do some ridiculous marathon for an episode of PXCR.
I don't see us doing that just because we have to travel.
I'd say so.
If we do, it would be like the first night we're there.
Yeah, because I mean, especially particularly around this time and all that with work and a limited amount of time of doing this, it wouldn't really be possible. If it would have to be during a holiday or when we're at G-Fest, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but, you know, hey, we hope you all have a very, 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 very,
very, very, very,
very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. You know, we hope you get all the wonderful G goodies that you ask for and more. If you out there are looking for any last-minute Christmas gift ideas for me... basically anything Godzilla that I don't have.
Like all the Bandais that you sold off?
Yes. Yes. I'm dead serious. Like, I will love you forever if you, like, just even buy me one Bandai Godzilla figure.
But then they would have to know your address.
All you have to do is just message the Godzilla Planet Facebook page, and I will be more than happy to share that stuff with you.
So, yeah.
But we hope you enjoy this episode, and we hope it takes you a long time to listen to it, because...
Yeah. It's going to take me a long time just to edit this episode, because I know I'm not going to do that tonight, because I need to get dinner going.
I'm not expecting you to, but as long as you can try to get it out by Wednesday or Thursday. You know, we do honestly hope that you have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Yeah. And we should be back in January, the first half of January, when we're when we got the site launched. Heck, we may devote
an entire episode.
If not an entire podcast to the relaunching of GP.com, and we'll still do the regular formula like we have been doing it. We guarantee it won't be, well, no, I will not say that. It may not be quite as long as this episode.
It's probably going to be quite some time.
We don't know yet until we actually record it. That's all I have to say.
Yeah, it's going to be quite some time until we reach this level, how much time we've talked.
I don't know, dude, as Godzilla 2014 news comes in.
Well, yeah, that too. I think it'll probably take up a little bit more time, but as far as talking a lot more about that, close to 3 hours, I'm not sure if it's going to go that far. But I do know when more information comes out of that movie next year during production date, which the production date start for that film begins, I think around mid-March next year, I think kind of around my birthday time. So at least that's kind of a nice little Christmas gift, pretty much the beginning of production for that film. We'll have longer episodes, I would say probably around 2 to 2.5 hours. I'm not sure we'll be able to get to 3 hours this time around. Stuff. So, at least we had a terrific 2012 with the podcast relaunch.
Even though we did what, like four or five episodes?
I think so, because we started just right after, or I think a week or two after GFest 19, and then we actually had a month or two mysterious hiatus there, and then we started to do one episode a month because of me devoting more of my time on finishing up the websites and stuff. But at least it's a good 2012 with us finally coming back after a year of doing a lot of stuff, and with me kind of in the downer with me losing my previous job when I was moving up here and searching for jobs for several months until I got for a few months back in Iowa until I got a job back up here in Minneapolis.
I need to find a full-time job now too. I just graduated. But so I hope I don't run into that problem. But anyway, we're going to start next year off right, and we should be able to stick to this schedule. And with me having graduated school now, we should have more time to devote to podcasting and more of a regular routine schedule of it. We're definitely going to start podcasting twice a month now. So, I know a lot of you out there wanted us to do more episodes a month, and I've been wanting to do that. Nessa's been wanting to do that. The only problem was that the website needed to be built. And I, with myself being in school, was always busy with school stuff. So
Because
now with all that behind us, it should be definitely a lot easier to do podcasting on a more frequent basis. So it's not just you, hopefully, that will be excited about this news, but we're definitely excited about it too.
Yeah, and with you graduating now and with you getting more time, that means we'll have more time to do more news research and finding more newer pieces as far as the Godzilla film and Pacific Rim, which to me, I think with the start of Pacific Rim, I think is going to be a new dawn of of the kaiju film. kind of a revival, as you say.
I hope.
Of it. So, with that said, for next year, just be on the lookout for more news on Pacific Rim and Godzilla when that starts in production in March. And as well as our live coverage of G-Fest 20 when that rolls around. And that's kind of pretty much more of the stuff. And then as well as just look forward to the new website here in a couple weeks. So, and that should probably be rolling up fast with us since we're on the 16th of December. The site launches on the 3rd. And so be on the lookout for a lot of cooler content for it than just, you know, postings of articles. Just we're gonna have videos and some other discussions. And also make sure to follow us on Facebook as well as Twitter. And we've also have launched a Google Plus page on there. So make sure if you're on Google Plus more than you are on Facebook, make sure to follow us there on Google Plus by liking us there, and as well as signing up on the Godzilla Planet forum, since that's getting a little bit more active now with our relaunch of the site coming closer and closer. So that's kind of pretty much it on my end.
All right, so that concludes episode 27, historic episode 27 of PXCR. Thank you for listening. Hope you have a happy, happy new year and a very merry Christmas. And 2013, going to be big, folks.
So, see everybody next year. Bye, everybody. Hey, don't do that. According to the actual time here that we've been on Skype, it's exactly 2 hours. Yep. Hey everybody, Nestmaster here, co-host of Planet's Control Room on Godzilla Planet. Hope everybody had a wonderful 2012 and hope all of you will have a Merry Christmas this year. And this is a bonus segment
that I just want to dedicate to all of our fans for sticking with us for more than 3 years, especially through our one-year hiatus between April of last year all the way through July 2012 when we started back up with the podcast and bringing back GodzillaPlanet.com. This bonus soundtrack is a little special gift to all of you, and this special little gift is a song, which is actually a video of a unknown person saying his interpretation of "O Holy Night." So here you go, guys. A little gift from Godzilla Planet to all of you that has stuck with us for all this time. So hope everybody has a Merry Christmas, and we'll see you all in 2013.
Oh, holy night, stars are brightly shining. It is the night of our dear Savior's birth. Long lay the world in sin and error pine, till he appeared and the soul felt its worth. A thrill of hope, the weary world rejoices, for yonder breaks a new and glorious morn. Fall on your knees, oh, hear the angels' voices. Oh, night divine. When Christ was born, and I, divine, oh, night, oh, night divine.
Ooh.